declare the meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management, members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of the meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council business team after the meeting. May I ask that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting? The agenda comprises 7 reports from management and 1 item of general business. Apologies have been received from Councillors Binder, Mortimer and Watts. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting minutes of meeting number 60 held on Tuesday the 9th of June? Thank you, Councillor Ong. Seconded, Councillor Wood. I'll put that motion. All those in favour, that is unanimous. Thank you. Are there any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting? In that case, as at 3 p.m. today, the following submissions were received in accordance with the Council's Conduct of Meetings Local Law 2010. In relation to Agenda 6.1, Planning Scheme Amendment C173, Carlton Connect, an item of correspondence from Ewan Ogilvy from the Carlton Residents Association, and a request to speak from Ewan Ogilvy. In relation to Agenda Item 6.5, Queen Victoria Market Renewal Master Plan, items of correspondence from Dominic Esposito, Greg Smith and Miriam Fain, and requests to speak from Dominic Esposito, Greg Smith, Miriam Fain and Angela Williams. In relation to Agenda Item 6.6, Melbourne Music Week, items of correspondence from Ray Carling and Chris Thrum, and a request to speak from Chris Thrum. In relation to Agenda Item 6.7, Car Share Services Review, as at 3 p.m. today, there were over 60 submissions received. They are noted in the minutes of the meeting, and we have requests to speak from Gregory Giroux from FlexiCar, Jeremy McLeod from Breath Architecture, Sahil Basan from Green Share Car, Madeline O'Connor from Green Share Car, Dave Collins, Pradeep Prabhakaran, Johnny Tonoto, Daniel Moore from New Architects, Jeremy McLeod from Breathe Architects, Jeremy Passaportis from GoGet and Tony Penner from South Banks Residents Group. I would remind you, you have 3 minutes to speak. I would also remind submitters, repetition is not persuasive. It is actually the opposite of persuasive, and I will leave it at that. Is there anybody who has requested to address the committee that I've not read out in the list here? Julianne. Yes, that's a different issue. No, it's not. It's in a moment. I thought you'd been to a few of these meetings, Julianne. I advise... I'm sorry.
I think I'm speaking to Dominic.
You think you are, or you are? Okay. On
the market.
And your name is, sorry?
Catherine.
Thank you, Catherine. Okay, and Jan Cochran-Harry as well. Thank you. I advise submitters that you'll be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. You have 3 minutes. We stick very strictly to that time limit. The beep sound at the completion of 2 minutes, and then you have 1 minute to conclude your address. When that final beep sounds, we ask you to conclude. In accordance with the Council Resolution of the 26th of March 2013, a 15-minute period is provided at the beginning and at the end of our meetings for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. This is not a time to make submissions or to discuss any item on the agenda tonight. I now invite questions from members of the public. Would you raise your hand if you'd like to ask us a question? Chris.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, councillors and men and women involved in Melbourne Town. My question relates to Melbourne's relationship with France and French citizens around the world. As we are mostly aware, today's Bastille Day. Now, 235 years ago, General Lafayette sailed Le Mion into Boston Harbour, and that heralded France's support for the United States in the Revolutionary War. And Lafayette had news that France would commit 5 battleships or frigates and 3,000 men to assist the United States of America in the Revolutionary War. This is a pivotal moment in the history of France and the United States of America. And I've sent to the councillors information in regards to the replica Le Mion that's sailing up the east coast of the United States of America now to commemorate the importance of Lafayette's journey to the United States of America and the importance of France's support of the United States in the Revolutionary War. And it's getting a lot of media attention in America and France, and it's a tremendous replica, the Le Mion. It's like worth investigating. My question is, in terms of like 90 seconds I've got to say it, is would it be possible for the City of Melbourne to invite or look at the possibility of inviting the Le Mion to Melbourne?
Thank you, Chris. We are in receipt of your very detailed email. Le Mion is an historic vessel. We can't guarantee that we can invite her, but we can certainly ask our officers to provide us with advice on that. We are pleased to do that. I'm not sure about her coming in with all guns blazing, as she did in Boston, but let's have a look to see whether it might be possible at a future date, and can we get back to you with an answer about feasibility?
Yep, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris. Are there any other questions? Julianne, isn't this where you wanted to ask a question?
Yes, thank you.
All you need to do is put your hand up.
Thank you very much. I have two questions. I think I'm allowed to. And I did provide a copy to you. Given there are an estimated 10 million visitors, shoppers, tourists come to the Queen Victoria Market each year from the CBD inner and middle suburbs, and that many park in the 700 car spaces now provided or on 1,500 street car spaces, can the City of Melbourne now detail parking arrangements under the new development proposals for the Queen Victoria Market?
Julianne, this is actually in our master plan.
It's
actually in our master plan, which is the subject of an agenda item today.
Right.
The answer is already on the public record, and we have an agreement with the state government that we will provide 720 car spaces, whether that's at the Munro site, the Franklin Street site, or within the Queen Victoria Market, is open to further detailed design, but that is in the papers today.
Thank you. I hadn't seen the detail of that. And the second question, given that there are 7 bus routes to and from the Queen Victoria Market, with 606 buses operating continuously daily, with the bus terminus located on the street in car parking zone on Franklin Street near the intersection of William Street, and given the new development wipes out Franklin Street car parks and the bus terminal, where and how will these extensive bus services operate once development plans are in place?
Well, the second answer to that is that the bus routes are a matter for PTV and we'll continue to work with them. The Franklin Street car parks must number about 20. There are very few car spaces there, and we've made the commitment that, as I said in my earlier answer, that they will be provided on either Munro or Franklin or within the Queen Victoria Market redevelopment. But in fact, the Franklin Street redevelopment will enhance the possibility of bus connection to Queen Victoria Market, not detract from it.
And the actual location of the bus terminal?
Well, that's a matter for PTV.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to ask us a question? In that case, could I ask Councillor Ong to assume the role of chair in relation to the planning portfolio?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There's one report from management tonight for consideration under the planning portfolio, which is agenda item 6.1, planning scheme amendment C173 for Carlton Connect.
Chair, sorry, I have a declare a conflict. I unfortunately have a indirect interest conflicting duties. University of Melbourne is my employer.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? Nope. In that case, I would call on Ewan Ogilvie, Carlton Residents Association, to address the committee. Ewan, you requested. You have 3 minutes. After 2 minutes, beep will go, and then you have 1 minute to complete.
Thank you, councillors. The Carlton Residents Association believes the objectives for Carlton Connect, which is the redoing, if I can put it that way, the old Royal Women's Hospital site, are laudable. Our concern is with implementation matters. The new planning scheme amendment includes significant changes to the exhibited amendment. We do not believe that these changes will facilitate an exemplary development of this site. There are also some inconsistency issues with the City North Amendment, which this council has already adopted. Some examples: the removal of all the demolition controls. These provisions in the current form of the scheme were expressed generally and not rendered irrelevant through the absence of a heritage overlay. Importantly, they gave the council the power to require temporary works or landscaping to address the bomb site problem. These provisions were not scrapped for the City North Amendment, which this council has adopted. The application of the urban design within the capital city's own local policy. The insertion of a new paragraph in the building design section of this policy does not make the policy a relevant one for this site, in our view. Since it was introduced in 1999, the clear focus of this policy has been on the Hoddle Grid and South Bank. Given that the Council has recommended against adopting this policy for the City North Amendment, we are left with the prospect of this particular policy applying to no other areas north of Victoria Street. Other matters of concern to the Association include several significant changes to the development plan overlay. In order to manage unreasonable wind impacts, the exhibited scheme acknowledged that the full extent of the building envelope shown in the schedule may not be able to be achieved. The revised amendment scraps this provision. The revised scheme no longer requires accommodation to be affordable. We understood that that was a very important objective of the council. The association certainly hopes that the Carlton Connect Hub will establish new benchmarks in sustainable development. We remain concerned that the university has made no commitment for Carlton Connect to achieve carbon neutral status. Unless our leading universities can walk the talk, they will not be taken seriously on the sustainability front. Unfortunately, the university doesn't have a good record on carbon neutral buildings. They haven't constructed one on the campus. So we would urge the council to press the university to deliver an exemplary carbon neutral development. Thank you.
Thank you, Ewan. Any questions for the speaker, councillors? No? You may take a seat, but I'd like to call Leanne to just address some of the points raised.
Great. Thank you, councillor. Do you want me to just step through each one, a few of the ones that were raised? Yep. So the removal of the demolition controls was removed from the amendment. This is because we only usually put demolition controls in place on a specific site when there is an existing heritage overlay. So there's no heritage overlay on the site, so we haven't included that. That's what the recommendation of the panel was as well. City North is a little bit different because City North has is a large area and it has sites with heritage overlays in them. The controls are different and the demolition controls remain there. The urban design policy within the capital city zone has been applied here because the capital city zone is what is the zoning that's proposed, so that's the most appropriate to apply. The urban design outside the capital city zone is typically put in place for larger areas which are more context-driven, so places like Kensington and so on. So this is a specific site which is in the context of an urban renewal area and the university, so it wasn't considered as necessary. The other concerns raised around wind impact, when the detail of the development is put back through, this only puts, if you like, a framework in place for the site. It's not a planning permit. So they will have to actually consider the wind impact and provide a report that considers the wind impact assessment at that time. And just lastly, I'll just touch on the issue of affordable housing. My understanding is all of the housing that's going in there will be student housing, so we wouldn't normally specify that it should be affordable student housing. It's student housing which would be managed by the university. So.
Thank you, Leanne.
Good job, Leanne.
Good. On that particular note, I'm happy to move the resolution that's up on the screen. I call on the councillor to second the motion. Lord Mayor, yes. I think this matter has been discussed previously, and I thank the officers for working through the panel's report and taking into consideration what the panel has said. Sometimes the panel's response to what we started out with is not always identical, and we take the position that where it's appropriate, we will adopt it. And in this case, I think the officers have looked at it carefully and says that generally it's consistent with what we want to do and consistent with what we've done in City North, even though it's slightly different because this is actually a particular planning scheme amendment for a large site rather than a particular precinct per se or a single application for a building. And I take some of the comments from CRA that's put in place, but I think the officers and Leanne has just clarified those issues for you. On that note, that site we all know needs a redevelopment, and it's going to be part of our knowledge precinct, a part of our future focus on further development of our education and research centre of the city. And I think it's a good development to proceed with, and over the coming years. Lord Mayor, would you like to add to that?
Thank you. I'll just say, I think we should follow the panel's recommendations. And that's what we are proposing to do with this amendment. I find sometimes the Carlton Residents Association a little baffling in that they seem to regard the University of Melbourne, one of the most respected and venerable and high-performing institutions of our nation, as an adversary, as some sort of evil developer, rather than as the ornament they are to Carlton and to the city in general. I want to thank Leanne Hollow for what is a remarkable set of succinct rebuttals of the assertions that were put forward today. And I don't quite understand what seemed to me the central argument of the Carlton Residents Association is that they want Carlton to be special, but they don't want it to be special at the same time, which is what this amendment does. You can't apply our housing strategy, which talks about affordable housing, to, you know, the broader range and say they have to meet the same requirements we would put on ourselves. And therefore, I think in supporting the panel's recommendations, after what has been the most exhaustive consultation, I really find objections to it that are, at a low level, less than persuasive.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Any other speakers to the motion? Any councillor like to speak against the motion? You'd like to speak to the motion. Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Chair. So when we sent this to panel, I did ask the panel, by way of an amended motion, to look at the suitability of the application of a zone other than the capital city zone to this site. They've certainly done that. They haven't come back to say that other zones would be inappropriate. They've come back to say that the capital city zone is the most appropriate. Now, I've lost my seconder tonight, so I can't test any proposition other than that one, not that I was necessarily going to anyway. I do accept that the panel and our officers have come back to say that the capital city zone is the most appropriate. That still does have unfortunate consequences. I accept that it's completely understandable and acknowledge that there are fundamental changes to planning controls in this area that are changing the way Carlton used to be. That is natural, that is understandable, and local residents that the association seeks to represent is correct to scrutinise these things closely. I also take the point, though, that they have been scrutinised. One of the issues that is changing here is that that site previously would have had third-party notice and review provisions applying to it, and after it will be gazetted, which I assume it will be, that will no longer be the case. There are other changes which the panel has made, which most of which are common sense, some of which I think are probably amendments for amendment's sake. I'm not sure how much value the panel has added, but that's probably because it was one site, and so there was the opportunity for the panel to go into an incredible amount of detail when normally if it was for a larger site they wouldn't have to, but I do question the extent to the value that they've added. But I do thank Ewan and the CEA for going through your issues as well and for being diligent on that question, as you always are. But on balance, I agree with other councillors that the objectives of what is trying to be achieved on this site are very important, that we should be supporting those objectives, and so on balance, I'm happy to support the planning scheme amendment as amended.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Any other speakers to or against? I'll quickly, I'll do a short comment on the closing part. Taking into account what has been said, this particular site, if we recall the history of it, when the Royal Women's Hospital closed and moved to the new site on the corner of Flemington and Gretton, it was sitting vacant for a while, and the City of Melbourne looked at the site and looked at how we could acquire that. But there's a hierarchy. It's a state government site. When the Department of Health didn't want it anymore, it's the first choice to go to any other government departments who wanted it, which then the next in line was Melbourne University. The third in line was the City of Melbourne, which we ended up lobbying and got hold of the Kathleen Syme Centre. If no one else wanted the site, it would go to a public auction and end up with a group of private developers, and the outcomes, we know that sometimes it's a bit harder to contain. I think this particular approach that's been taken as a planning scheme amendment, with a irrespective of what zoning it is, clearly defines a set of rules that we go forward with. And as I said before, the panels look at it, we had looked at it, various parties have looked at it. We can't satisfy everyone, but I think from a long-term perspective, this is a very good outcome. And the city had a good outcome with the Kathleen sign that just opened. So I think on balance, we should fully support this. On that note, I'll put this to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hands. I declare to carry it unanimously. I now call on Councillor Louis to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the economic development portfolio.
Good job, Leanne.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor. There are three reports from management for consideration on the economic development portfolio. Agenda item 6.2. The post-travel report by Councillor Kevin Louie and Councillor Jackie Watt, Milan, Italy, May 2015. Would councillors like a very long, extensive presentation on this item? there's great pictures. Thank you. Well, I'm happy to move to the agenda item. Second. Thank you, Lord Mayor. Could I? Okay. Thank you. As a mover, I'd like to put on record at my thanks to Martin and Jane and of course Andrew and your team for the great work prior to the travel and getting all the appointments and all the engagements set up, and of course Jane leading as always capably the troops, and also. On record, I'd like to also thank Tony DiDomenico as well, the President of the Italian Chamber of Commerce. Through the Chamber, they also helped coordinate a number of the engagements and also provided great support, in particular with having Tony travel with us on the ground as well. It was a great opportunity to reconnect, of course, with Milan, with a relationship that's been looking for some strong foundations. I think certainly the mission was a great success. Black Box was very well received. But at the end of the day, I think of all the missions I've attended, I've never actually ever been offered a truck in return. But it's been great opportunity, and so I want to put on the record that I know that we're assessing the proposal by Iveco or Stroke Fiat for a trial or partnership with the City of Melbourne on their latest biomethane gas facility to produce the biomethane gas, and also for the truck that also runs on the biomethane gas for the City of Melbourne to partner with as well. And you know, it's a great opportunity. There's a number of actions and a number of opportunities that are being investigated, but we look forward to a mission from the City of Milan to be here. I understand sometime after the World Expo finishes at the end of this year. So,
thank you. Just to say, if there is a partnership with our sister city Milan, it is around design. I had a demonstration of the Black Box exhibition, and I was very proud of Melbourne ingenuity in that world forum. I understand it was extremely well received. I want to thank Councillor Louis for his work around the business part, and also Councillor Watts for her work around the Knowledge City part and the connections that were made there. I think in the last 2 years we have remarkably strengthened our design credentials with Milan, and that can only be a good thing for Melbourne businesses. Our next step is not just exhibition, of course, it is turning that into work for Melbourne design companies, and I think we're very well placed as a result of Black Box to do exactly that.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Any further speakers to the motion? Oh, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Just to note, too, that Milan is a C40 city and a 100 resilient city as well. So the sharing of knowledge between cities like Milan and Melbourne, and indeed cities around the world, on how they're coping with impacts of climate change and building city resilience is also a key outcome of this visit as well. So I'm more than happy to endorse this trip and also the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. Deputy Lord Mayor.
I also endorse this. I found the report a great read, and I thought the summary of benefits and outcomes for our city were remarkable, and things that, as Councillor Louis said, it can be followed up after the trip. And I do want to thank the officers involved, because it was a trip that was put together with great earnest, and we've come out of it showcasing what Melbourne does best and strengthening our relationship with our sister city.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Any further speakers? No?
Future councillor.
Good contribution. Very good contribution.
Noted. Thank you. There's...
I can't. Oh, just put the motion.
In that case, I'm happy to put the motion to vote. All those in favour? Unanimously. Thank you. Agenda item 6.3, 2016 City of Melbourne Business Mission to do Japan and China. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No? Thank you. In that case, can I call on the councillors to move the motion on the board? Lord Mayor, thank you. I'm happy. The councillor Wood, thank you. Let me see.
I'm delighted, as we have made the commitment to go back to Japan and China, to Osaka and Tianjin in particular, but also Beijing, to raise the flag for that in order to signal to our businesses that we're happy to take them there. I think we do a very good job in taking a smaller number, between 15 and 20 businesses, to these very targeted trade missions. Medical Japan has become a very great opportunity for us in Osaka, with Mayor Hashimoto asking us to return, and of course Mayor Huang in Tianjin welcomes us every single time, and particularly our urban design, architecture, clean tech and biotech companies are very keen to accompany us into Tianjin. So once again, I think we need to press the button of business in these two sister cities. We have now written something like, I think it's between $900 million and $1 billion in business with Tianjin in the last 5 years, which has been a pretty remarkable partnership. So again, our every second year delegation to Osaka and Beijing and Tianjin, and we'll be going out to Melbourne businesses to invite them to take part in this mission.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Councillor Wood.
Thank you, Chair. I support the comments of the Lord Mayor, and indeed I think the businesses that attend these missions also comment on the doors that are opened by having your presence on these trade missions, and I think the breadth of businesses that will accompany this trade mission will be just as fruitful as other missions have been. You can't get two bigger markets than Japan and China for particularly our clean tech services.
Thank you very much, Councillor Wood. Any further speakers for the motion, against the motion? In that case, I'll just make a short comment to close. This item is still very much a work in progress still, and as all missions are, they need long lead times. So we look forward to there'll be another report coming back, of course, once the itinerary and the budgets are firmed up further, and the delegates and the industry sectors are also firmed up as well. But it gives us a great opportunity now to open it for expression of interest for businesses, individuals that like to join the Lord Mayor, and the Lord Mayor's missions are always very, very high level with the support out of Tianjin, and particularly out of the support out of Osaka. So this is a great opportunity now. As soon as it's been voted on and passed, businesses now can, Jane, the phone will be ringing hot. So thank you. In that case, can I put the motion to a vote? Was it in favour? Unanimously passed. Thank you. Agenda item 6.4, the City of Melbourne's draft tourism action plan. Would Council like a presentation on this item? No? Thank you. Can I call Councillors to move the recommendation on the board? Yeah, I'm happy to move. Deputy Lord Mayor, I'm happy to second. Thank you. Lord Mayor, would you like to speak to it?
Yes, look, I support this action plan, and I look forward to the implementation of many of the items that are placed in it. It is one of those, I think it's the first, if I be corrected, that the city has done on tourism to this extent, and joining forces with our state government and other community bodies and stakeholders to go forward with something that will be a great economic development for our city.
Thank you, Mr. Bill, Mayor. As a second, I'd have to comment that certainly tourism is one of the largest industries in Melbourne, and it's very important in terms of the $8.5 billion it generates for the greater Melbourne metropolitan area as well. But we look forward to now putting the report out, looking for industry feedback, and looking forward to, I suppose, it's been all of council piece of work. So everything from our tourism, from our business branches, infrastructure in terms of signage. So it has a complete and whole council support. So said, looking forward to the consultation and for the feedback that comes back. Councillor Arnold.
Thank you, Chair. Just a comment too. I think it's great, as Deputy Lord Mayor said, this particular action plan. In some my mind, it's also a statement of intent of what we need to look at. Because the figures in the report are very clear. Tourism numbers are increasing. Accommodation numbers levels are also increasing. If it continues at this rate, we will have issues to deal with coming into the future. Issues of services, facilities, visitor services, accommodation, hotels of all levels. And I think it's great to have a plan now and work with industry to prepare for the future. I think one of the important things is, as government, you always need to look into the future and say what's going to happen and what we're going to deal with before it hits us and we ask what happened. So I think it's great to have this particular document prepared. Now, the five key areas here on planning to come to Australia and then getting here and then spending time here and looking at what to do here and then leaving, and the experience. A good strategy will mean that not just people who come will have a good experience,
but he will tell others, because the word of mouth, when we know in business, that word of mouth is always key. The TripAdvisors and all the other social media sites, people put in their ratings. And if we don't get a good plan in place and good strategy in place, we'll just have terrible ratings and nobody else wants to come here. And the fact that we are currently still the world's most livable city itself adds to the attraction. So I commend the officers for the work, and I look forward to the final detailed report and the specific deliverables out of this plan.
Councillor, any further speakers for or against? That goes to put the recommendation to the vote. All those in favour? You don't speak pass. Thank you. I now call on the Lord Mayor Rob Doyle to resume the chair, the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the major projects portfolio.
Thank you. There is one report from management for consideration on the major projects portfolio, and that is the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Master Plan. Could I call on Catherine Underwood first to ask to address us to speak for no more than 3 minutes?
Lord Mayor, councillors, I'm here to speak to the submission you received from Dominic Esposito on behalf of the Queen Victoria Market Lower Market Proprietary Limited. First, the car park. In converting the car park to public space, the area of the market is diminished. So, if the new car park is to be on the Munro site, will it be subject to the Queen Victoria Market Land Act? And if not, what guarantees do we have that any car park will actually serve the market? In a similar vein, what consideration is given to the future legal structure for the Munro site? Will the commercial portions of the development remain with the QVM? Will we end up with chain stores and a supermarket, or be swamped by businesses identical to our own and thereby diminish our viability? The language around the plans for the lower market is wishy-washy and vague, leaving the intended outcomes completely immune from scrutiny. Is this murk intentional, or is it a genuine reflection of the state of play? There are differences in language and purpose between the draft and the final plan, which begs these questions. There is uncertainty about the future of H&I Shed. Will there be enclosed, an enclosed adjunct to the dairy hall? Will there be shops down the market side of Therry Street surrounding and hiding the market? Will the lower market still be a one-stop shop, including veggies, or will our magic triangle be destroyed? The lower market traders should be included in planning at the formative stage. We should have funding for advice and representation to assist us to participate fully, and we should have full access to the reports and documents that inform decisions. A few years ago, there was a plan to turn Delhi Lane into a covered seating area. What happened to it? Delhi Lane will be crucial to the market during construction. Customers will need a place to retreat from the chaos on Therry Street. We need to reactivate that plan now to minimise the impact of the Munro site work. The lower market traders are currently offered 5-year leases with no options. There is no question that the renewal will result in a downturn, yet there is no discussion of how to mitigate the effect on our business or reward traders who continue to invest and work in this environment. And furthermore, our rents have been raised significantly at a time when our businesses are most vulnerable. What extraordinary logic. The leasing arrangements should have been and should be negotiated in the context of this looming transition. Traders are here because they have made a choice and to have businesses that they are proud of. It should be applauded and supported. And finally, it should be of real concern to Council that a significant number of traders are so distrustful of the renewal process that they have sought and paid for legal representation. There is a sense that the big end of town is gathering force, ready to push us aside to make way for development and a future that they see and we don't. If this is not the case, then they should include us in the planning. Thank you.
Could I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
You asked to be included in the planning.
Yep.
Where have you been for the 3 years that we've been talking to those traders?
Talking to, yes, but coming to with plans, not actually asking for input on the advice side of it.
Not asking and for often, input on, over often, 3 years.
No, I have been going to those meetings. But often what we say and what comes back seems to have no relationship.
Good heavens. Sorry. Could I ask Greg Smith to speak, please?
Lord Mayor and councillors, Lord Mayor, you mentioned at the beginning of the meeting about repetition. What I'm presenting is pretty much what I've said online. Is that the sort of repetition
No, that's
you're talking
okay,
about?
Greg.
Okay, good. Thank you. My name is Greg Smith. I'm a trader representative, and tonight I want to talk on behalf of four of the trader representatives at the market, those that represent PE and SL traders. We're known as the flexible group of traders. We pack up and set up each day. And therefore we have specific issues in the way we operate. We welcome the reaching of the final stage of the master plan, and we would like particularly to refer to issue number 7 in Rob Adams' agenda item, which notes that traders expressed a strong desire for more detailed information about implementation. And it further notes that a timeline of early 2016 was anticipated to consider the implementation strategy. The term strong desire probably understates the feeling of traders. There is great uncertainty, concern and anxiety, not only in the implications of a renewal, but of course in the background is a retail recession that many traders are battling with. We are keen to progress the improvement of QVM at the earliest opportunity. We don't want to sound impatient, but we're ready to go now. We understand that proper planning cannot be rushed, but the renewal process has identified many areas of market operation that perhaps could be further identified, explored, and even trialled, with some energetic input and some additional yet modest resourcing. For licence holders, the PE and SL licence holders, that may include things like permanent stalls, new stall configurations, and possibly even trading hours. We are ready to saddle the horse, get on the bike, whatever it takes to get the process started, and we ask that consideration be given to early adoption measures for components of QVM renewal before 2016. We urge Council to assist in this process, and we'll be making a similar request to QVM management at a Queen Victoria Market Advisory Committee meeting on the 23rd of July. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Are there any questions for Greg? Thank you very much, Greg, again. Could I call on Miriam Fain to speak, please?
I'm here today representing a different market constituency. That is, I want to speak on behalf of people like myself who are the customers who shop at the market every week. And I use the word customers advisedly because we're referred to in the consultation process as visitors, but we're not visitors. We come every week, we spend hundreds of dollars, the market is part of our life, we are on first name terms with many traders here, and we have ongoing relationships with the market. And we also are a significant contributor to the economic success of the market. The fresh produce vendors estimate that we are responsible for 80% of their sales. Okay, and I represent a Facebook page, Friends of Queen Victoria Market, and we have over 1,300 likes, and we're relatively active, and the kind of concerns that I'm saying today have been expressed by others. We feel, in spite of the comments by the Lord Mayor, that our voice has also not been heard in the consultation process. We've made comments, we've been to meetings, and we've done everything we've been invited to, but somehow the points we've made, our input, has not made it into the final plan, and it has not made it into the reports and feedback. So I welcome this opportunity to represent our views. I want to add that we value the market heritage, but we recognise that this extends beyond the built heritage to an appreciation of the market as a social and trading space based on its functioning as a community space for small-scale trading over 150 years, what Mr. Kayafa's father referred to as a people's space, a people's market. And if the bulk of the present market area is remade as a public space for events, pop-up market, curated craft, it will just be like any other space in Melbourne, and it will lose what is distinctive about its heritage, even if the sheds remain. So we're not grateful at all for the redevelopment process. We want the market to stay a everyday shopping space. I've made detailed points in my written submission, which you can read, but we're also very concerned about the accessible car parking. 720 pace spaces are not enough. Many of us also use the spaces, street parking spaces around the market, and we estimate there are 1,200 spaces available in the market precinct, and there is no detail whatsoever other than a vague statement in the plan you're looking at today about where those places will be. And we've already seen concerns raised about the Munro site, but if the Munro site is used for housing, part of it, then some of those car parking spaces, most of them, will not be available to market customers. I carry 20 to 30 kilos of shopping home a week, and I'm not going to do it on a bicycle. I'm not interested in pedestrian access, and I'm actually public transport would be difficult for me. So the lack of specificity in the plan is of concern. My final statement is...
Sorry, your time is up.
Okay.
Are there any questions for Miriam? Miriam, I have one for you.
Yep.
I've read your letters to the paper.
Yep.
You are against the redevelopment of the market,
sorry?
Aren't you? You are against the redevelopment of the market, aren't
I'm
you?
Not against a redevelopment of the market. I am against the kind of redevelopment that has been proposed. It's already been, you've heard from Mr. Smith and from other traders that improvements are required. And in fact, the market has been substantially run down in the last 2 or 3 years. I go every week and I'm aware of empty spaces, that parking is the most expensive in Melbourne. There are many changes that could be made, but they are not the changes that are envisaged in the plans, and I believe that's because you have not listened to the market community, not the traders, and certainly not the regular customers.
We will agree to disagree.
Thank Sorry?
You, Miriam. Could I call on Angela Williams to address us, please?
Thank you, councillors. Is there a pointer thingy I could use, please? Thank you. I'm a North Melbourne resident. I've lived in North Melbourne for 30 years and I've shopped regularly at the market during that time. I walk or I ride my bike to the market for the majority of cases, so car parking's kind of not on my radar. And of recent times, it's become my venue for urban sketching. So the market is really important to me, and I've been here many times, and you know that heritage is kind of important to me too. What I value about the market is the fresh food and vegetables, the fresh fish and meat, and also the fantastic traders that have been there ever since I've been going to the market, and you just keep going back and they're still there, and I love the small business aspect of it, and I fear that that is under threat here. Could I just go back? What I also love about it is the open sheds, and I would hate that that is going to disappear. So my main points are, on the next slide, the refrigeration and storage, the edge treatment, and the Queen's Corner. The next slide, please. I'm not a fan of refrigeration and storage being put in permanency in the fruit and veggie sheds, because I think it blocks what I value, which is the openness of the market. And if I wanted to go to buy refrigerated stuff, I'll go to Coles and Woolies, and I don't like doing that. Next slide, please. The main thing I don't follow about the master plan are that all these dotted lines around the edges, and in the key a dotted line means investigate opportunities for buildings and usage to make adjoining streets more active and safe. I hope that that doesn't mean more buildings around the edges of the market. It doesn't? Well, could I respectfully suggest that the master plan should be altered to say existing buildings rather than just buildings, because it looks to me where all the dotted lines are, we're anticipating buildings to come along, and I think that that would be really detrimental and loss. So the next slide just illustrates that openness that exists on the fringes, and the social kitchen, which was on the corner of Peel and Victoria Street, really blocked off that openness and view through, and I think was not a good thing. The next slide, please. Again, Ferry Street Queen Street. Not a good thing to put buildings there. The next slide, please. My last point is about the Queen's Corner administration building, which in the master plan says it's the bottom levels and then the top levels. The planning scheme amendment says about 10 to 20 metres. I am wondering what the process is to deal with the public understanding how that will be
Angela.
Done.
Thanks. Other questions for Angela? Thank you, Councillor.
Sorry, for Professor Adams, if I could. The recommendation, if it were to be agreed to tonight, the second part authorises you to make minor editorial changes to the master plan. Something new has been raised for me today, which is that it seems that the issue about active edges has been interpreted as meaning new buildings, whereas the master plan doesn't actually suggest that new buildings are in place. So I think it's an interpretational issue. Are you open to making minor editorial changes to clarify that point in the final version of the master plan?
Thank you. In that case, could I call on Jan Cochrane-Harry to address us, please?
Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. As CEO of the market, I'd just like to put on the record management's continuing commitment to continuing to work closely with both traders and customers as we continue to develop the details of the renewal of the market. Communications are very, very important. Open and transparent communications between all of the interested parties. We understand and agree that traders have a legitimate interest. They are worried about loss. They recognise and endorse the intention to pursue the authentic and historic character of the market. They too do want to enhance the full potential with their involvement. They wish to be consulted. They have been, they are being, and they will continue to be. New issues can be addressed between us. I hear what Miriam Fain has said about her experience as a customer, but there are thousands of other customers telling us that they do want change, and it is the type of change that is being proposed. I just briefly like to thank and acknowledge the input during the development of the master plan of customers, of traders, who I agree are fantastic, have staff both of the City of Melbourne and our own staff at QVM. This is an important staging post. There's much more work ahead of us. We are all in a partnership, the City, QVM Proprietary Limited and the traders, and I feel confident that we are on the right track. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Jan? The councillors want a presentation on this issue. In that case, I'm happy to move the motion. Is there a seconder for it? Councillor Mayne, thank you. Could I say, this is, remember, the conclusion of 3 years of consultation and talking with our community. And we understand that there is some unease. We're dealing with people's livelihoods and their history. We get that. But on the other hand, you know, you would understand also that on the one hand, we have people saying to us, go faster, get on with it, complete this quickly. And other people who are saying to us, slow down, we're very concerned, you know, and that's difficult. So the course we're steering, which is sort of down the middle, is probably the right one, although it maybe doesn't give comfort to either of those groups. Could I make a couple of points which we've made so many times before? Without traders, there is no market. It's as simple as that. Without traders, there is no market. We are not going to do things either during the course of this or at the end of this that in any way would disadvantage or discourage traders to be in the market. Rather, we want more of them, and we want those of them who are there to be more successful. It was the traders who first came to me now over 3 years ago to say, if you don't do something, you won't have a market. You know, doing nothing is not an option. And we are doing our best. I reckon 3 years to get to a master plan is probably a pretty good consultation period. That's not detail or document or implementation or business as usual plan. It's not any of that. It's just the master plan. And this has taken us 3 years. So we actually, I think, need to draw a line now. In the course of that, we've done two things, I think, that should give all of those traders great heart and, I hope, great encouragement. The first was the $76 million decision to buy the Munro site, to secure not just the parking for the market, but also to inoculate against the bad development that may occur at the market. And we put out the principles by which that development must be governed. And we intend that that should be the Bible for development in that area to add to the market. And secondly, recently with the federal minister, we announced that the QVM will be put on the National Heritage Register. You know, that hasn't happened. That it isn't on that register now. It isn't protected by that. And that's an important protection. Now, I hope we can leapfrog from that to World Heritage. I don't know if that's a big leap. I don't know if that's possible. But surely listing on the National Heritage Register, those who are so concerned about its heritage, why hasn't that been agitated before? It's taken this process to actually do that, to protect its heritage. So I do take, you know, some umbrage at the concern that we're not concerned with the heritage of the market when this process has actually put it on that process for the very first time. And finally, can I say, for us, you know, if you're worried about your business at the market, remember for us, we are stumping up $250 million of the council's money. Not traders, not customers, of the council's money, in order to protect and enhance this market and invest in its future. That's what we want to do. So I think, to be honest, 3 years to get to the point of agreeing the master plan is probably reasonable. The other concerns are reasonable as well. Implementation, speed of implementation, the minor details, the business as usual, the continuity of business, all important to be addressed in their time and in their order. But until you have a master plan in place, you can't start to address those questions. Councillor Mann.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Look, I'd just like to thank the submitters to start with. Don't always occasionally wince with some of the words that are said, but always respect your rights to come here and present. And we're always interested in hearing from as many different people as possible. So I agree that the detail here will be important. And the implementation plan in early 2016 is where, you know, we really get into the implementation and the detail. It's a big picture master plan. So it's not giving you every last answer on implementation issues. Car parking, we know that a substantial amount of it will be at the Munro site, but we don't know that all of it will be there, and there's some of the other 720 that we've committed to with the state may be located elsewhere. That's the sort of issue which is in the detailed plan. Relocation and disruption, I agree, will be a vital issue, and I think we will need to consider mechanisms, look at what's been used around the world, mechanisms to provide some confidence that the city is dealing with the traders in good faith, and that we have your interest at heart, and that we have incentives to maximise your outcomes, so that we can build in protections if possible, and obviously have great transparency from traders in showing if there is any loss that they have suffered because of some form of relocation issue. These are the sorts of things that will have to be worked through over the next 12 months. Lord Mayor's right that we've just settled on Munro, which is a huge commitment. We're in debt. We've borrowed a $70 million facility from the ANZ Bank. So, you know, we're going in boots and all here with this project like never before. So we have an interest in getting it right. We have an interest in the prosperity of the traders in the long term. I personally am a little bit nervous about the 10-year time frame and would like to see more now sort of approach rather than the staggered longer-term approach. And these are all issues that we will be able to deal with when we get to individual budgets and individual aspects of the implementation plan. Finally, I'd like to thank the officers, obviously Rob and Mark, who've led the team, and Jan's team. It's great to hear you present tonight, Jan, and provide some context from a market management point of view. I've got full confidence in the board management of the market, and I'm full confidence in the officers here. You can see why previous plans to renew the market have fallen by the wayside every single time it's attempted. You know, you can just, it's multi-dimensional, it comes at you from all directions. We've been remarkably united in committing to the renewal, in committing these huge sums of money so far, and I get a sense that the determination around the table is very stoic, and we will simply do our best to make this a success, and if it's a success, then everyone will have benefit. And so here's hoping that with all the skill that we've assembled, that this project will be looked back at in 10 years' time as a long overdue and highly successful investment in one of the biggest and the best markets of its type in the world.
Thank you. Is there a speaker against the motion? Is there a further speaker to the motion? Councillor Roll.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Speaking as Deputy Chair of the Major Projects Committee, I think the Lord Mayor and Councillor Mayne has covered a lot of key issues here. And one of the key points that the Lord Mayor said is doing nothing is not an option here. We spent 3 years and we listened to a lot of people. And one of the key things in my mind from past experience in working in industry and professional organizations is that there's a lot of input coming in. You have to take the big picture and then decide which are the ones that will actually help to develop this strategy moving forward. And of course, you will receive negative feedback because it's what I call a not invented here mindset. If it's not invented here by me, it's not good enough. I think what's important here is that we have passed that stage, as I said in the last time. The officers, Rob and Mark and the team with QVM and the steering committee of the board, I think the amount of work that's gone in, the time's taken to listen to everyone, yes, not everyone's opinion is adopted. Because I hear, we put in this thing, it's not in the system. Talk to another group of people, we put all these things, it's in there. They wanted the 720-odd car spaces, we are putting it in there. But we're putting more electricity, more environmental, sustainable systems, cleanliness, occupational health and safety. But the most important thing is after this particular master plan comes the scary part. It's change. Change is scary. So one of the key components in this, and which is why the council is looking at putting together a top-class gun project team, is to manage that process of change of a complex, multi-phase, multi-stage, multi-project, multi-sub-project type of project. And attempting something this big by council, I mean, I've been here 6.5 years. We've done some major projects, building a new library, multiple new libraries, and $10, $20 million projects. This is 10 times that. And I think that if anyone thinks that it's going to be easy, it's not. And the other thing is, yes, some people want it to hurry because really we have seen the deterioration of the market. But I think let the officers take it to the next stage, the implementation stage. We want to engage. I hope that all the people who are positive about the future will help us get there. Because if we have to keep on putting up with various blockages along the way, they'll just extend the project. And I can tell you that. As many of us as look at the history of the previous attempts, the blockages kill them. We don't want to go down that path. Too much is put in place. We spent too much money. We got to see and get a good outcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Wood.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I think we are united in getting behind this project, but I'll disagree with Councillor Ong on the scary part. I think it'll be uncomfortable. I think there's going to be times where information will be sought and provided. I think there's going to be times of uncertainty, but I don't think it's going to be scary. I think it's going to be hugely exciting. We want to get this right just as much as you do, and that's been made plainly clear. Thank you, Councillor Ong. Heritage is important. Open space is important. Cooling that space is important. At the moment, it's a rather hot space. Produce is important. All these things, and I think the way it knits into the social fabric of North Melbourne is really important as well. But when you look at this project, this is a project where we've put a lot of money into it already. We're putting a lot of brain power behind it in terms of our own officers. When we get to the plan to actually implement this project, that's where the level of detail will tell you exactly where the car parks are going to be. At this stage, what it should show you is that by not actually nailing every single car park down to a post, is that we're still open to listening even as we work through this process. I've heard the concerns of the traders and their real concerns. I think there's a lot of perception issues at play as well. We heard about the increase in tradable hours, and I know that a lot of traders thought that that meant that they were going to have to work around the clock. But we've had a successful night market with lots of different traders coming into the space as well. So I think, yes, there's going to be issues. I think the team is heavily committed to working through those issues. But I think what you're going to end up with is a market which is builds on all the good things that that the market currently serves this city for. It serves tourism, serves regular shoppers, does serve open space, and what you're going to get is an even better market at the end of it. I just make one point about the global perspective in terms of the fact that there is already a C40 advisor that's looking at the environmental reputation of the market. So what we're going to end up with is a precinct which demonstrates best practice in energy, in water, in waste, and that'll only enhance the clean and green image of the produce that's actually served there. So I see a lot of upside for this market. Yes, in any major project, there's going to be different perceptions and a lot of uncertainty. It's our job to work through those, but we want to do that in partnership with you. So my ask from you is that keep on making your viewpoints made, but work with us on this. Don't see us as an adversary. We are people that live in this community as well. My business is on Peel Street. I'll be impacted by the market redevelopment. I live in Kensington. I shop at the market. I want to see it protected as well. So don't see us as adversaries on this. We're going to invest some serious ratepayer dollars in making this the best market in the world.
A further contribution, Councillor Foster.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Look, I'd like to speak in favour of the motion as well, and I think it was always a bit of an ask to have any sort of uniform view around an ambitious plan like this. There was always going to be a diversity of views. It's important that we're hearing them, though, and I want to thank the traders, whether you agree entirely with the master plan or not. I want to thank you for your passion and your commitment to the market, because without that, as the Lord Mayor has said, we wouldn't have a market. But again, hearing those voices is enormously important. And I want to keep hearing those, and I'm sure all councillors do, as the implementation of this plan unfolds. And if, as Jan mentioned earlier, communication being so important, I hope that our communication over that time is something that you feel that you can continue to respond to and be a part of. I think what's most important, though, at the end of the day when plans like this are implemented, is that there is a genuine feeling and a genuine sense of fairness for felt among traders, among customers of the market, and indeed the community at large. So that's something that we should all turn our minds to as well.
Thank you. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Can I just pick up where Councillor Wood left off? He's made some very good points about the broader perspective of that many of us are trying to achieve here. And just like many others, I'm a local that shops at the market regularly. If there's one thing I'm not, and if it's one thing that I've got a reputation among my other colleagues here on council, is someone who's beholden to the big end of town. I think I'm probably the most hostile to the property developers at the big end of town, but I participate in this program, in this project, as much as I could anyway, because the full gamut of what we're trying to achieve here is quite large and difficult to grapple with, and the only way you can do it is to go in and give it your all. But we've had this debate at last month's Future Melbourne Committee meeting, where we looked at the penultimate version of the master plan and acknowledged and had that very long debate where we levelled with all of the traders who came in and some of the visitors and some of the customers who came in, I think it was mostly traders at that time, and acknowledged that this is a master plan. People have different ideas as to what the purpose of a master plan is. What it is not is a set and forget. This is a very high level indication of what we're trying to achieve. Yes, we might second guess the desired outcomes in there about wanting to maintain the character and the purpose of what we value most about the market and the traders who are there. But there will be next levels of detail down that people will still be able to engage with. One that's been raised today, of course, is the Queen's Corner building. That will be subject of a planning application, the full details of which will be on the public record. The full details of the built form controls related to the Queen Victoria market, the rezoning of every last square metre of land in there, and the exact desired, preferred and mandatory maximum heights of certain, you know, walls all across the Queen Victoria market, that is the subject of its own planning scheme amendment process, the full details of which are completely on the public record and anyone can engage with them. So I think that, yes, we are acknowledging that change is a little bit uncomfortable or scary, or whatever word you want to use, but also the sheer fact of the size of a project like this, which is just a participatory project, which is a master plan, and if you've got 1,000 people involved in a master plan project, you'll have 1,000 different interpretations as to what a master plan actually is. That is just the nature of what we're dealing with here. But just like Councillor Wood has mentioned, just like the Lord Mayor has mentioned, I will add my voice to say, yes, please keep talking. The implementation is just as important as the policy setting, and we've got a long way to go. The last thing this is set and forget.
Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I know you said you didn't want repetition, but and I understand that we are saying many of the same things, but it's important that I speak. I wasn't at the last meeting that Councillor Leppett referred to, where I understand there was a lot of discussion about the implementation and the finer details, and thank you for repeating, I guess, a summary of that meeting. In repeating a lot of what my councillor colleagues have said, the main point I wanted to make was that two of the presenters tonight represent the category that I believe I fit in as well, a long-term community resident and a long-term attendee at the market. You'll see me in Delhi Lane on Saturday mornings every weekend if I'm in town. But I've been going there for over 30 years, exactly the same, and I've got a lot of friends, very good friends, who are active on the Save QVM site that Miriam mentioned, and their viewpoints are very important to me. And I guess I would like to think, and the way that I read the master plan is that the views have actually been interpreted and represented in the master plan that we see. And I like to think that our representations on behalf of very committed and passionate customers of the market have been included in the commentary in the master plan that I have before me, and that's how I read it. And when it talks about sense of place and sense of community, when it talks about a place that, you know, people go and meet people on a regular basis, it talks about customers and outcomes for customers. I believe it is interpreting a lot of that feedback that we have brought. But like my colleagues, I welcome further conversations and further input as we move into the finer details and the implementation phase. And I am very excited about what the market is now, but also, of course, what it can be in the future.
Is there further contribution to the debate? In that case, I'll put the question of those in favour. That is unanimous. Thank you. Could I now call on the Deputy Lord Mayor to assume the role of Chair in relation to the Marketing Melbourne portfolio?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There's one report for management for consideration under the Marketing Melbourne portfolio. Agenda item 6.6, Melbourne Music Week 2015. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? There is one speaker. I'd like to now call on Chris Trum. Where is he? There he is. Who requests the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. I think you know the rules, Chris.
Just give
3 minutes.
Seconds.
Yeah,
well. Before I start, if there's anyone from the
QV...
Chris, just wait for a second, Chris, until people leave, and then you can start.
That's the future Lord Mayor of Melbourne in 40 years' time.
Yes. Junior Lord Mayor.
Yeah, Junior Lord Mayor.
When you're ready, Chris.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, and thank you, councillors, men and women of Old Melbourne Town. I'm a musician. I know a lot of musicians. I know a lot of venue operators, and I can assure you that they're very thankful for the amount of time, effort and energy that the City of Melbourne puts into Melbourne Music Week. It's still a very young sort of festival, but it's sort of gathering a lot more momentum. Similar to, like, say, the Leaps and Bounds Festival that's occurring right now in the City of Yarra. One point I'd like to make, I think last year we had the hub space that was at the Victoria Market, was it?
Yes.
I'm going to listen to 3RRR, 102.7 on your dial. That's 2.4 less than 105.1 for your football. But I'd like to mention that 3RRR broadcast from the hub space, and the excitement and energy from the hub space was palpable if you were listening to the radio. Speaking to presenters and musicians who did perform in the hub space, they got a kick out of it. They love performing at the Victoria Market, and they love performing at Melbourne Music Week. People I know around town, when they're like going from venue to venue, there's a real extra element of excitement when they're going about their nocturnal activities with Melbourne Music Week. So in terms of like the linkage of venues and performers and musicians, it's tremendous. And again, I commend the planning team for the amount of time and effort and energy that they put into getting a cohesive festival occurring. And I understand that they're looking to refine an improvement. But Melbourne Music Week, I believe, would be enhanced if the Palace Theatre was involved in future Melbourne Music Weeks. The Palace Theatre is not just any theatre. It's a much loved and revered venue that has been celebrated from within the State Parliament of Victoria to the man and woman on the street. It's a theatre of style and scale, which is unmatched in the city of Melbourne. Having the Palace Theatre involved in future Melbourne Music Weeks would be a sensational augmentation to the customer experience, offering a superlative venue touch point on the customer journey as people go around Melbourne Music Week. So in conclusion, again, I'd like to thank the planning team for what they do for Melbourne Music Week. I understand, like, just the logistics involved would be, like, you know, phenomenal in what they're sort of achieving. And one final point I'd like to make is, like, I think, like, if you look at the Melbourne Comedy Festival and the utilisation of Town Hall, maybe that's a future direction too for Melbourne Music Week, to the space here for, like, say, acoustic sets or for smaller combos. It could be ideal, and to have, like, a box office on Collins Street. So looking at the Comedy Festival as a guidepost for the use of the space as well.
Good idea.
Thank you, Chris. Is there any questions for Chris? Actually, Lord Mayor likes your idea.
It's a good idea.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I now call on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Leppard. I call on a councillor to second the motion. Yes, I will.
All right. To clarify, the motion I'm moving is in the terms of that has been recommended to us by management. Let me just start by thanking Chris. Very entertaining as always. I am a musician too, and I share your passion for the Palace Theatre. It is under recognised by government. However, currently the situation is that the owners of the Palace and us, it's currently a situation of barristers at 10 paces, and there are VCAT proceedings proceeding and all the rest of it. I think for many reasons, though it might sound like a very good idea, the Palace Theatre as a venue is not a realistic possibility at this point in time, unfortunate though that is. It's also not fitted out as a music venue at this time. All of the music and sound infrastructure has been removed, regrettably. This is the sixth iteration of Melbourne Music Week. Melbourne Music Week has grown up and it's getting very exciting. Can I thank Elise and Ellen, Steve and all the team who have been working on the previous iterations and continuing to improve this event. What we're looking at today is just approving or endorsing the Melbourne Music Week program for 2015, and I'm only too happy to do that. Can I also thank everyone in the industry who has participated in the consultation forums and all of the various options we have throughout the year to provide their ideas, not just for the program itself, but for the future vision of Melbourne Music Week. This is an event that is designed to showcase the best of music in Melbourne and the best of the Melbourne music industry, and so it's very important to me that we do work with the industry as best we can to make sure that the event is continued to be shaped with the industry's interest in mind.
I also endorse this. I actually found when this first came to the table with Councillor Oak many years ago that I didn't quite know where it was going to land and how we were ever going to be able to achieve a music festival. But 5 years on, or into our sixth year, I believe, this has been a great success. And the success is not just because of the music industry, it's because we are able to give so many free tickets and ticketed events, and we can draw on so many different parts of our community to join in to this festival. The other part I love about it is the city hospitality is also such a winner when we produce such a major event like this. So, yes, I commend this.
I support the recommendation and endorse the program. It's great to see that elements of the plan that have been going for quite a few years are going strong, like the live music safari, which is such a success with our great live music venues in the city of Melbourne, self-made, the partnerships with ACME and the movie series. It's an amazing opportunity to sit down in a very small space and hear your favourite musicians talk about their favourite films. I love it. and also, obviously, co-producing an element of the program with Face the Music, which has been going strong from the start. So it's a great-looking program. And again, thank you to the team for everything that Councillor Leppard and the Deputy Lord Mayor has said. It's going stronger than ever, and it's all a result of the hard work from our team and in collaboration with the music industry.
Are there any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Leppard, do you want to close? I will put the motion to the vote.
All those in favour, please raise your hands. So unanimous. I now call on Councillor Oak to assume the role of the Chair of the meeting in relation to transport portfolio.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. We'll just wait to see if there are others that need to leave the room before we call on a long list of presenters for the one report from management under the transport portfolio item. We've got agenda item 6.7, the car share services review. Firstly, would
Chair, can I ask for your indulgence, and I'll make a suggestion here at the recommendation of a couple of other councillors. There is an amended motion that I intend to move, which may have some bearing on the contributions to the debate to be made by some of the submitters. So this is a very this is not consistent with the meeting procedures code, but as Chair, can I suggest that that alternative motion just be put on the screen at the beginning before the submissions, and I might not get to it later. Thank you.
If others don't see any issue with putting this up, obviously others might have other amendments they might to put later, but okay, we'll put Councillor Leppard's proposed amended motion up on the screen.
Can I just ask Councillor Leppard a question in that instance?
Yes.
So
and I Councillor am getting Leppard, to the presentation from the Manager of Engineering Services.
So that essentially means no increase in fee.
Okay, I think we should let's wait for the presentation. So, yeah. Okay. I'd like to ask the Manager of Engineering Services, Jeff Robinson, to make a brief presentation on the car, the report that we're discussing tonight.
Thank you, Chair, and good evening, councillors. The report before you presents the findings of an independent review which was undertaken into the car share operations within the City of Melbourne. The report also presents a proposed operating model into the future which was developed by management. Car share has operated in the City of Melbourne since 2006 and primarily outside the HODL grid. In 2010, the Future Melbourne Committee approved a three-year trial inside the HODL grid, and this commenced in 2011. The review requested was undertaken in the last financial year. A full copy of the report is provided in the documentation with you. It was undertaken by Philip Boyle and Associates. Currently, there are three car share companies operating in Melbourne across some 250 nominated spaces. So the next slide, ideally, PowerPoint. Send it to Hannah. Okay. In that case, the location plan, which would have been on that slide, isn't quite there yet. So it would have highlighted where the spaces are. There are 40 spaces provided off street, and there's 210 of them on street. The 21 spaces that are in the HODL grid are currently charged at a fee of $3,000 per space. The remaining 229 spaces are free. That was as resolved by the committee at the time. The independent review undertaken recommends a progressive increase in the number of spaces from 250 to 2,000 spaces by the year 2021. The proposal is supported, but we've looked at the recommendations, and subject to some considerations and conditions, as we've outlined in the report, propose that the car share be implemented in a longer term basis. Winner, there we go. So this slide, if I can just backtrack, this shows the location overall for the spaces across the city, 210 on street, 40 of the off street, and primarily in off street car parks when they're inside the CBD. Running through with a proposal to expand the thing, if I just go to the next slide, please. In summary, 3 points: growth to match the demand profile as it develops. Round about 60 car spaces growth per year. A ratio of 1/3 to 2/3, so that would be 1/3 of the expansion model car share spaces to be on street and 2/3 to be off street. And by 2021, to have 600 spaces on street. So the all up for 1,400 off street for the 2,000. So broadly 100 spaces within the CBD HODL grid, 160 spaces in the metered spaces in the non-CBD, and 340 of the spaces elsewhere. In the report in attachment 2 before you, there's quite a detailed series of criteria for determining the location of the spaces, so I think that it would be beyond time limit to run through those things now, but it is in the report. The report also recommends that a fee structure be applied. There are three fee structure models which were proposed, so pretty much the full fee recovery, no fee recovery, or a partial fee recovery, so three bears in the porridge. We are recommending the partial fee recovery be applied. The details are in there, but I think the thing to note is in the next slide, please. Over a three-year period, so we are proposing, and the recommendation is such that if the recommendation is adopted tonight, and so what we've tried to do in the report is balance the demand for car share and the need to expand it and the will to expand it with the reducing or mitigating the revenue which clearly is associated with the rental of a parking space. So it's not a car space meter, it's renting the use of the road space progressively. So year one will have a fee, year two has a slightly higher fee, and year three has a slightly higher fee and across each of those areas. So the HODL grid clearly is the high demand area, so with price and demand, starting off with year one at 1,500 and ending up at year three at 4,500. And that would apply if the recommendation is adopted this evening and as proposed that we get approval to start in September of this year, that would be effectively the starting of year. So in September this year, the 21 spaces that are currently charged at $3,000 stay being charged at $3,000, and all of the other spaces are then classed as year one. So the other 190 some spaces would become year one. In September of 2016, that becomes year two, and then would all click to here. In the meantime, a new operator or one of the current operators might identify a car space. If that was established and the criteria are met for how that goes in, that becomes a year one space, even if it was in the second year. So it's reasonably complex to watch, but we simply have a whole series of year ones and twos, and it would progress through to finally in around about 2018-19 thereabouts, we're all in year three, and hopefully we are starting well towards the 2000 mark or 600 on street. A dilemma will be, of course, the recommendation that we're putting in, that it's one on street equals two off street, and that requirement will be placed on the operators to go and negotiate those deals on a commercial basis with the off street car park operators. Currently, the 210 spaces associated with some $300,000 loss in parking revenue. It's a figure that just is directly related to those things. The proposed model, as I mentioned earlier, stabilises the loss of revenue to rates similar to now, and pretty much no significant change. So it's not an exact science, but after the 6 years, we would be roughly in the same point of loss as we are at the moment. The full details of the cost models are in the report, and I commend the recommendation to you.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Are there questions, Councillor Leppard?
Thank you, and can I preface my question with an apology? I should have suggested that I put this up after you had a chance to put your your presentation in. That was quite rude of me, so I apologise. My question is it implicit, is it not, in this report that after 3 years a further report will need to come back to Council to seek authorisation for further fee setting, etc.?
Through you, Chair. Yes, it is. It's intended that in the future we will come back to committee and give you an update on the overall 3-year program. I think it's quite appropriate that councillors are advised. This is a reasonably significant application of a policy. It's consistent with the transport strategy. My intention would be that we would provide regular updates via briefing note, and then at the end of the 3-year period come back with an overarching sort of review and a recommendation to proceed one way or t'other. Whether that, I don't know what that might be. It would depend on the uptake, it depends on feedback. The intention isn't to set and forget. It's not a matter of just rolling this out and then never speaking to the car share operators again. We've had quite regular contact with all of those, and we would continue to do so. And community feedback's equally important. That three-year report would be perhaps not dissimilar to this report in length, style, flavour and recommendation, but I don't know what it would be.
Just a related question then, and thank you for that. If it becomes apparent then that the incentive system, if I can call it that, where two off-street parks in exchange for the city providing one on-street park is something that is apparently not working for particular operators, or we're not hitting our targets, I assume that it would be your intention then to bring back a report earlier to review the situation. Is that the case?
We will know quite quickly whether that's going to be a winning concept or not. It really is a balancing act, and perhaps one that's unlikely to sadden anyone in the room. However, it was quite a difficult report to write, because tempting as it might be to get into this, into the politics of this thing, somewhere or other it was balancing that natural tension between the good thing for one side and revenue on the other side, and how do we pitch that. I don't know that I've, again through you Chair, I'm not quite sure that the incentive is quite the right word. It's more a motivation to sort of sit back, because we're not privy to the commercial arrangements that could be in place. It could actually work in the favour of us, in that there are some pretty big firms that are operating in this space. It may well be that there's a commercial arrangement put in place where one could go and quickly negotiate 100 spaces in a car park. I don't know if that could be the case, in which case there's 50 spaces available straight away. Right? We have had representations made that if that was to be the case, how would you share that amongst the car share operators? Well, my response to that is we won't be sharing it. If a car company can go and do that, then they've done the hard yards to get those 2-to-1 things, and they're entitled to that ratio on the street. There are new operators emerging. There are currently 3 operating in Melbourne. I've drifted off that one question a little bit, but there's 3 operating right now. I think it's important to highlight how new operators will be treated and addressed. The criteria are there for a reason, so that we can have a baseline to draw them in. We would then apply, tick, tick, tick all of the boxes to get a space. They've done their thing getting the 2 off streets, and it might be that it's too hard for a new operator to get the 2 off streets. I think we'd have to then come back and brief you up to sit back and say whether we intended to let that slide, but that's not a precedent I'd like to recommend that we do from the get-go. What I would suggest then is that, a new operator turns up, space is allocated, year one commences, and the progressive fee structure is then applied, and we would support them as the same way as we've done to the other 3, which, not surprisingly, when we've spoken to the current operators, the ideal would be free spaces and as many as we can get. Can't do that. We have to balance it with everyone else who needs it. I'm sorry for the lengthy answer, but...
Are there any other questions for Mr. Robinson? Councillor Louis, could you put your microphone on, please? Is it for Mr. Robinson or for Councillor Leppard?
Well, I just want to clarify 8.2, the final, for the next 3 financial years. Is that? Sorry, this is the 8.2.
So,
which for the last sentence, we've all year 2 fees carrying over.
Through you, Chair, right. In answer to Councillor Louis' question, the underlying section has been inserted by Councillor Leppard. The original recommendation proposed that we run with option 3 for 3 years, which tied in with the report back to Council. However, there's a alternate motion being made, which is the underlying section.
Did you have a question for Councillor Leppard, Councillor Louis? Yeah. Okay, are there any other questions? If not, we'll proceed to... Thank you, Mr. Robinson. There may be further questions to you as we proceed through the list of speakers. Mm-hmm. So the first presenter we have is Greg Duran from Flexicar. And as you've seen for the other parts of this meeting, you've got 3 minutes to speak, and the buzzer will go at the 2-minute mark when you've got 1 minute remaining.
Thank you. Dear Lord Mayor and councillors, for transparency purposes, I would like to clear any misconception regarding FlexiCar ownership as raised by some councillors. It is public knowledge that FlexiCar is owned by Hertz Australia. Hertz has a strategic interest in car share. However, FlexiCar operates under a separate business model and must maintain a sound financial position. Hertz is not supporting FlexiCar financially and will not support the service should it not remain viable. The Independent Car Share Service Review commissioned by the city is unambiguous. Car share is the most single effective way of reducing the future residential vehicle fleet and vehicle kilometers traveled in private cars. We need to remember why the City of Melbourne supports car share in the first place. At the highest level, the city's transport strategy is articulated by the Lord Mayor Robert Doyle. I quote, "No great city in the world is trying to bring cars into the city center." Unfortunately, the draft car share policy and the latter recommendation is inconsistent with the transport strategy objectives and the independent report recommendations. In addition to the high cost recovery model suggested, the requirement to add 2 paid off street parkings for each new on street location is unrealistic with the financial realities of car share services. This is an additional hidden fee, and this condition must be dropped. We must remember that car share is the cure to the high parking demand and congestion issues the city aims to tackle. First, the idea that car share should pay for the parking revenue foregone is absurd. Car share is an effective and integrated public transport system as recognized in the city's own transport strategy 2012. Yet the suggested commercial treatment of car share is inconsistent with the management of other public transport providers. Rail, tramway, taxi, and bus operators do not pay rates for their use of public land. If cost recovery models are adopted tonight, the car share policy will be at odds with the city's own position toward public transport. It will be inconsistent with the city's own transport strategy. It will be out of step with international and domestic best practices. Car share services will contract, as fee will make the service unattractive and inefficient to deploy vehicles. Contraction or suppression of services will result in external costs to the city, as outlined in the cost-benefit assessment. Tonight, you are not just voting on the future of car share in the City of Melbourne, you are voting on the threat of an additional 16,000 resident vehicles by 2021. You are voting on the future of Melbourne as one of the most livable cities in the world. With this in mind, I urge you to adopt the free car share provision model and to disregard the conditional paid parking additions. Thank you for listening.
Are there any questions for... Lord Mayor?
Despite your earlier disclaimer, Hertz is your parent company, is it not?
Correct.
What is the market capitalization of Hertz?
It's in billions if you consider the Hertz Corporation.
Okay. You have operated successfully till now with a model which does have you paying for your on-street parking. Is that not right?
Only a very small portion of them, which are located in the hodl grid, 7 of them to be exact.
But we're not asking you to pay any more for the ones that we're offering to you now.
Yeah, but we wouldn't be able to add a lot more to the network, given that we'd have to add 2 off-street parking for each on-street one.
Your point that to ask you to do that is absurd. I'd like to test that. Mm-hmm. That is a direct taxpayer subsidy to what is effectively a private company.
It is a public transport option, as you recognize yourself in your own transport strategy.
Yeah, but all of the other public transport options, including taxis, pay enormous amounts for license plates. Contrary to what you said, all of the other operators, they're subsidised, but they do pay enormous license fees to government for bus, tram, train. Mm-hmm. Why should you be different?
I believe that they do make an enormous amount of profit as well, which is not the case of FlexiCar.
That's not a reason to subsidise you that you're not successful.
Well, I'd be very happy to share a statement in confidence so you can see that the recommendations that you put forward in the report...
You are happy to open your financial records to us?
In confidence, absolutely, as long as they will not be made public.
Why not transparently?
Excuse me?
Why not transparently?
Why not transparently?
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, that would send, a clear message to competition.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I just want to make it clear that Hertz is not backing us financially. They have a strategic interest in Karsham.
But hang on, let me just take you back. When you weren't here at the start when we did this, as I recall, Greg, and FlexiCar was then independently owned, Hertz made the choice to acquire you after we had put this regime in place in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yep. At the time, it was a different management. I'm not the one who started this.
No, I understand
this.
That. Yeah. I understand, but that is the history of it.
Yep.
That Hertz made a commercial decision to acquire you under this regime.
It was a strategic decision, and it doesn't mean that they would make the same decision at this point in time.
Really?
There are other questions? Councillor Ong?
Following on from the discussion and the comments, Gregory, if Council proceeds with this, because you're saying that our proposal is an absurd position to take and is against our own policies on the transport policies and so forth, but if Council proceeds with this, does that mean that FlexiCar will withdraw from the market and other new players come in?
That FlexiCar will be, pardon me, Councillor Ong, could you repeat?
That if we put this forward and carry it through and pass it tonight, that, and it's totally inconsistent with what you have said to us tonight, will FlexiCar then withdraw from the market, which allows new players to come in?
Not necessarily withdraw, but it would definitely contract our growth and our expansion, and we wouldn't be in a position to meet to help you meet the 2,000 cars target by 2021. I can only speak on behalf of FlexiCar here.
Councillor Main.
Greg, can you tell us a little bit about your growth or lack of growth in off-street parking? Like, do you have any arrangements with owners' corporations in residential towers to help them with car share, or are you primarily on-street and haven't really gone into the off-street market?
We're primarily on-street. We have a number of bays in off-street paid parking in the city. We do have some arrangement with some private developers, but most private developers after dedicated car for their resident, which is a model that's very hard to make work because of the small captive market. But we do have some arrangement with some private developer, and I like the recommendation about developers. I think is a fair one. I think one of the issues that we face is that developers would reach out to car share company much later to the planning stage, which is, you know, complicated for us to cater to their need. Mm.
Okay.
Councillor Wood.
Thank you. I think that's a really important point about linking up with developers. I take the point that to date it hasn't happened early enough in the piece. But if that did happen, given 70% of the population in the City of Melbourne lives in apartment towers, would you not say that that's actually quite a big market, not a small market?
It is a big market indeed. But, you know, and I can speak from our experience to date, it is tougher than it seems. People have a preference for on-street parking, and some analysis into how residents of private development who are using our services show that even if they had a car in their basement, they would prefer to use the cars that are on street. If all of the cars are also put off street, we also lose a lot of the membership benefits that come with it, because people see the service on the street and it shows them that there are alternatives to privately owned cars.
Any other questions? No, thank you. You can sit down now, Greg.
Thank you.
Okay, we now call on Sahil Basin from Green Share Car. I keep saying it around the wrong way. That's how to clearly enunciate it. And again, you've got 3 minutes to speak.
Thank you, dear Lord Mayor and councillors. Thank you for the opportunity to present. Green Share Car is actually a family-owned business and operates 75 car share vehicles within the City of Melbourne. In Australia, the City of Sydney has followed a path of strategic expansion. Both the City of Melbourne and City of Sydney have implemented car sharing policies. However, the two municipalities have arrived at significantly different outcomes. Today, there are 800 vehicles available in the City of Sydney, and the membership equates to 20% of its residents. Each time City of Melbourne invests in upgrading bike lanes, bus lanes and taxi ranks, these fees are absorbed by the council. Carshare is a new and innovative way of public transport, and we ask that the same admiration be applied. Currently, 157 cars are being replaced by a priority bus lane. The cost of this is more than 10 times the revenue foregone from the City of Melbourne for car sharing services. We would like the opportunity to work with Jeff and the administrative team to develop a win-win situation, which we haven't done at the moment because we haven't been given that opportunity. As an example, car sharing bays could be allocated at the front or rear of existing parking, which has already been, now Jeff, please, which has already been created as an example at East Melbourne, where City of Melbourne has actually allocated Green Share Car a space in front of an existing car bay. Additionally, we could implement the technology in your fleet of vehicles. This proposal has also been provided to the City on many occasions. We predict reducing 30% of Council's fleet costs. The consultant's review found that the net community benefit for each car share vehicle was $3.50 for every dollar City of Melbourne spends or revenue it does not collect on car share services. Fast forward to the year 2021, when the independent consultant predicts 2,000 cars are required within the City of Melbourne, the benefit would be in excess of $100 million to the city. Green Share Car is a start-up company which is very, very fragile at the moment. Each month, we are subsidising the service by $15,000 a month to keep the business operating. Your decision tonight could force us to cease our operations entirely. Lord Mayor and councillors, I urge you to pick option one, which supports the consultant's recommendations that the City of Melbourne adopt a strategic expansion approach to accelerate the growth of car sharing services without charging unprecedented fees, which could result in the exact opposite, result in the exact opposite outcome. Thank you for listening to my opinion.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Councillor Main?
Thanks, Sahil. If we were to defer this decision until a later council meeting, Sahil, would your company also be up for confidentially providing us some insight into your financials?
Definitely, and we can definitely back that $15,000 a month contribution that I've said that we're subsidising the business. We could confidentially pass that on to council, onto the condition it would not be made public.
Yeah, sure. And second question, the greater take-up in Sydney, can you tell us more? You're in the industry. What do you put that down to? Is it partly the location of Sydney, where the streets are narrower and there's more need for it because they've got less parking capacity as a whole, or is it the policies of the council, more subsidy to the industry? Why is there such a difference in your view?
Sure. I was trying to be very, very positive with my approach in today's operations, but I don't mean to seem to be attacking the administration, but it forms in a different part of the administration in every other council bar the City of Melbourne. And I think that I'm answering this in a roundabout way, that engineering services is in charge of parking meter revenue. This service should be in charge for someone like sustainability, who would have a completely different view on the actual tangible outcomes of this service, rather than $200,000 that we're losing in parking meter revenue, which equates to 0.5% of the city's complete net revenue from parking. Now, to answer your question in terms of why has it had a more significant uptake there, the council is very more open to actually accepting car bays, to accepting applications. They've got a thorough process. Port Phillip in Melbourne would have has got a fantastic process to actually reviewing and providing feedback, and has got a thorough process for actually implementing car share. At the moment, we had, with engineering services, we had more than four applications on hold for more than 6 months because we've had recent changes of management, people being on annual leave. We send it, we get asked to send emails to engineering@melbourne.vic.gov.au. We can show you numerous examples of emails not even being answered, people coming back on leave and then asking us to send our applications over it again and again and again. So there's a twofold effect here, is that if the City of Melbourne would put this in another portfolio, I would see that the benefits of the actual review that have been taken would be given to you in a much more pleasant light than have been already. And as an example,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I understand your frustrations, but I don't know if they're going exactly to the report that's in front of us tonight or answering your question, Councillor Mayne. So, Councillor Mayne, if you're able to confirm whether you've heard the answer to your question. Thank you. Councillor Wood.
Can I a short answer on this one?
Sure.
So, with your monthly losses, how long have you been losing $180,000 a year?
We've been losing more from when we actually commenced the business. The $180,000 has been a recent improvement in the business. It was substantially more when the business was a startup in the first 2 or 3 years. And every business that would be here operating would back that. It's not an easy business. Sorry, when you're charging, $12 an hour.
I don't think you actually answered my question. How long have you been losing $15,000 or more a month? And when you charge your books?
Since day one. Happy to show you the books.
So how long is that?
Oh, sorry. Okay. 4 years.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry about that. I didn't actually understand that question from the first... Yeah.
Are there any other questions? Councillor Foster.
Thank you, Chair. You've undertaken to provide financial information to us confidentially in the event that transpires. Are you able to do that in a way that doesn't argue that council should subsidise your business losses?
Well, I mean, we're going to give you an accurate balance sheet, so the way you interpret that would be up to yourself.
I think... Okay. Are there any other questions for... We will move on to the next presenter, also from Green Share Car. Thank you. We also have a presentation from Madeline O'Connor.
No, just in spirit of what Lord Mayor said and everyone else said, we will not be repeating our other views, and that presenter will forego.
Very good submission. Outstanding work.
Dave Collins, you're up next. I've got here that you're an independent sustainability expert. There you go. Yes, you have 3 minutes to present and 1 minute when the buzzer sounds.
Firstly, thank you so much, councillors, for creating this wonderful environment. It's a privilege to be here and to be part of something that's transparent and fair. I'm here representing both users and ratepayers. So let me look at it from a user's standpoint. We run positive energy buildings. These buildings create 50% or more energy than they consume, renewable energy. And these cars are an essential part of that, if you like, ecosystem for us. Most of our tenants use these cars, and they really, you know, they find them essential. I think it would be a huge loss if they didn't have them. So whatever answer we come up with tonight, can I ask you, make sure that we don't compromise the service. As a user, I guess it's fair to say that we've got lots of wonderful public transport in Melbourne. I think this is just another form of public transport, and I think there is a fair comment from Sahil about that situation. And I guess the other thing, too, is that as a ratepayer, though, I would hate for this to impact on council revenue. I would hate to get an increase in my rates. I applaud the sensitivity that you have for ratepayers. Thank you for that. But at the same time, we're also the world's most livable city. We're the world's, I think, one of the most creative cities. We're certainly one of the most energetic cities. Even on days like today, I mean, for us to be here on such a cold night, that's impressive in itself. Is there, and I don't know the answer, you all know much more than I do, and is there a more creative way where we can tap into the benefits that clearly are in this? I mean, the independent consultant estimated that there was, what, over $3 per dollar, if you like, cost to the council. But I see the difficulty. You know, it's a split incentive problem. You know, the beneficiaries aren't necessarily the people who are paying. How do we reconcile those two problems? And can I suggest that we think about this? Maybe there's a more creative funding option. Have we tapped the state government? Do they have a transport strategy? Clearly, the state government's getting a benefit from this. Can they help contribute to this? Is there any way that, in fact, that there can be a more creative financial process where, in fact, the plum sites, maybe they're tendered out for a lot of money and you know, frankly, overseas owners are prepared to pay for those, but maybe the other sites are for free. So that how do we reconcile overseas or external investors versus Melbourne-owned companies? Do we have a Melbourne-owned support program that we can put forward? Bottom line is, I'd be happy to help. I'm sure lots of folks within the community would be happy to help. Let's give this a chance to find a more creative solution that creates a win-win and create a positive energy Melbourne.
Did the buzzer go off and I just ignored it? Okay, sorry. Sorry. Thank you, Dave. Councillor Wong.
David, thanks for that. Just thinking about what you say, trying to come up with a more innovative. If what's been suggested by Councillor Leppard in the addition section, the 8.5, yeah, in trying to get, say, more of the property industries and building owners to I guess, come to the party of providing off-street, because the consultant's report also indicated there should be more off-street as well. And we have seen that even FlexiCar have said that they're working with some. What do you think that, in one hand, we try to encourage that? The other part is we look at the current planning scheme, which now currently defines the maximum number of car spaces that you can have in a development, minimum number of bicycles, motorcycle parking, and so forth, that if we take a leap forward, if we put in the planning scheme that all new developments should and must put in a certain proportion of that type of service, wouldn't that maybe help the industry in the long term?
You know, I think that's a very, very good suggestion.
Can I
say this though, that I don't want to give a knee-jerk response and say yes, I think it's wonderful, but I think it's a wonderful suggestion that we should put on the table. One of the things that is missing, Councillor Long, is, I believe, a comprehensive examination of this problem. What I even see in this report, and it's a wonderful report that the consultant's done, but the brief has been so narrow that I think it may have missed opportunities for this more creative approach, a financial sort of strategy that isn't just predicated on let's slug the, you know, these guys some more money. And clearly it's a simple response, and clearly it would address the immediate short-term cash needs. But I think we can do better than that. Yeah,
I would point out that the amendments suggest we're not going to slug these guys any more money.
Well, certainly
the amendment does.
The Lord Mayor, I guess, has been a wonderful leader in sustainability. I suspect some of the other cities.
Dave. I know we have a lot of speakers yet to come, and thank you for your response to Councillor Wong. But if there's no other questions, we'll move on to the next presenter. No, thank you. Okay, so I'd like to call on Jeremy McLeod from Breathe Architecture, also an independent sustainability expert, apparently. But thank you for presenting and for your written submission as well.
Thank you. Who's operating the last? Okay, thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for hearing me tonight. So, who are we? Yep, thank you. So we're just architects. We run a small practice. We're based in Brunswick. We've been doing work in the city of Melbourne since we established ourselves in 2001. We established our practice as a sustainable practice. When you Googled sustainable architects in 2004, there were seven of those in Melbourne, and we were one of them. Now you Google sustainable architects, and the list goes on forever. One of our key tenets is about how do we deliver affordable, sustainable housing? how do we deliver a walkable, great, livable city? And the key to that often is around a really clever green transport plan. We did Seven Seeds. We won the Sustainability Award for that in 2010. There's no cars for Seven Seeds, but we did put 10 bike parks inside the cafe. So we gave over floor area to bike parking. We also have water tanks inside that. We did Brother Bubba Boudin in Little Bourke Street, which is a 35 square metre cafe. It sells 1,000 coffees a day. It doesn't provide any car parking spaces. We did the River Studios for the City of Melbourne in 2010. The Lord Mayor was there to open that for us. We didn't provide any additional car parking, but we did provide 16 on-site bike parking spaces. We did the Commons apartment building, and we started that process in 2007. We worked really closely with the City of Moreland, and it was finished 18 months ago. It was the first building in Australia to be predominantly two-bedroom apartments and have zero cars. And in part of that, we had a really aggressive, dictatorial green transport plan, which committed the owners' corporation to having go-get car membership as part of that, or a car share membership as part of that. And so we've been working really closely with car share memberships around sustainable housing. And one of the key goals of the Commons was to reduce the apartment cost. So we took out a $750,000 basement. This is right next to Anstey train station. And by doing that, we reduced the cost of each apartment by $30,000. We're now working on Nightingale apartments across the road for the Commons. And the key to Nightingale is, again, pulling out a $500,000 basement and providing a really aggressive green transport plan, which ties the body corporate to a car share membership. Yep. Yeah, this is a quote by Edward Glasser, an economist and a planner who talks about the triumph of the city and how to make a great walkable city. Yeah. So we know that private car ownership is not the way to a great walkable, livable city. Yeah. Yeah. So at the Commons, the ownership of cars per household is about 16.7%. The greater Melbourne ownership is 84.8%. So we've had a massive reduction in private car ownership there. Yep. Yep. So what we think is that by charging for the cars... Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I've got a question. Have you got anything else you want to say?
Yeah, thank you. So basically what we're saying is that there's an opportunity for the City of Melbourne to incentivise car share take-up. So what we've seen is when we started, there was one car share operator. So when we started the Commons in 2007, there was one. Now there's three. When we started, you know, I had to have a car in my practice. My practice now, there's nine architects, and every one of my architects has a go get car membership. My wife and I use go get car membership. Everyone in the Commons uses go get car membership. And what's interesting about that is by having all the cars on the street, it's been incredibly easy for us to take up and use that and grow and use that without having private car ownership. And I guess by having cars on the street, it's easy to see, they're easy to use, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that you use cars, because when you don't have one, you know where the next one is. I think the problem with putting cars inside private developments, and I'm all for forcing developers to tie themselves to, I'm all for this, to force them to have car share memberships as part of their owner's corporation, but I think putting them inside private buildings is a mistake. So we're trying to build buildings that don't have any cars, and so we think, sure, make the developer provide an OC plan that ties them to a car share membership, but put it on the street. Don't hide it in a car park.
Any other questions for Jeremy? No, thank you.
Thank you.
And now call on Pradeep, is it Prabhakaran? Thank you. Sorry for that, my pronunciation. You have 3 minutes to speak.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Lord Mayor, councillors, users, and everyone else. Thank you for having me here. I'm Pradeep Prabhakaran, an active member of multiple car share programs that's available in Melbourne. And when I heard about some of the changes that were happening a few months ago, thanks to a workshop, a community workshop that was a precursor to all this, I believe, I was pretty interested in the impact that it would have. And I believe that it is extremely prudent that the
City of Melbourne does not negatively impact car share users by virtue of having increased usage or membership costs in whatever form or shape that may be. Because I believe that the whole reason that car share is attractive is because of its low costs to get in, to start using, and even ongoing costs as compared to your full day regular traditional rentals, taxis, or even your private car ownership. I've not owned a car the 7 years I've been in Melbourne. I've had a motorcycle. I've gotten rid of my motorcycle because I've found that car share is perfect for my needs, all kinds of vehicles and all that advantage. And I also strongly believe that if the costs increase, we probably not use it as much, and the user proportion would probably go down. One of the examples I'll bring up, it's been mentioned and it's come from the councillors as well, is Sydney. Because during our workshop, it was highlighted that Sydney had a much higher uptake. Obviously, there's a population density, and they have a slightly larger CBD and probably street parking and things like that. But when I did a comparison post the workshop, it appeared to me, even though I don't reside in Sydney and I don't have memberships there, the unit cost of car share in Sydney is lower than what it is in Melbourne for the basic membership. Food for thought, maybe. So that'll probably have an impact. Thank you.
Thank you, Pradeep. Are there any questions? No, thank you for your submission.
Thank you.
I now call on Johnny Tenoto to also speak for 3 minutes. Then we have Daniel Moore from New Architects Melbourne.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. So yes, I'm Daniel Moore from New Architects Melbourne. We're a community group that allows new architects and emerging architects to present projects to a community of other new architects and emerging architects. And many of our members, or many of the people in the community, actually use car share. And when we heard that this was happening, we actually contacted a couple of them, and we spoke about the affordability of car share and why we use it. And it's because it's a financially viable system. I actually work with Jeremy as well at Breathe, so I use car share regularly, probably more regularly than other members in the community. And basically, we just wanted to say that if the levies are applied, that many of the people in our community will probably have to reconsider using the car share. It's a perfect in-between between public transport, bike, and cabs, because it's cheaper than cabs, and it's also faster than bike. But yes, just in terms of that, that's basically what we've been saying. It's as simple as a financial option. And also just in terms of architects looking at the future of the city, if the city is growing, it would actually make sense to support these guys and what they're doing. If we can get more people sharing cars and have fewer cars on the streets, then that means that we'll be able to, build more buildings for people and fewer buildings for cars, hopefully. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Are there any questions? Okay, no. I have next on my list, Justin.
Sorry, can I just ask one question?
Yes.
Our last two presenters have made very good points about not increasing the cost of car share for users. I just want to ask Jeff Robinson, is there anything in this amendment, or indeed this motion, which will, by action of the City of Melbourne, put up the cost of car share? No, but that's not putting up the cost of car share.
Chair, answer to the question. My understanding of how, the original intention wasn't to directly force the cost onto the users. Certainly the intention was to pass a cost through to those who wish to rent the parking spaces from the City of Melbourne as our asset base. If the car share company operators, it would be perhaps naive to suggest that some of those costs may not pass through. However, it wouldn't be a direct forcing from us to sit back and say, pass those costs on.
But the direct costs, I mean, I don't ask you to comment on the amendment, but it's true the amendment would remove the year three cost impost that was originally proposed, which would be a direct cost by the city.
And a very rough calculation in about the 10 minutes prior to committee this evening would say that by changing that from the third year back to the second year and capping would be about $250,000-$300,000 extra.
For
us to bear.
Thank you.
Or for council to bear.
Thank you.
Yes, Councillor Main. Who are you asking the question to?
To Jeff. Have we got any modelling or any idea on the cost of the private car parks that we are effectively mandating the current operators to secure? Or is it whatever the market determines?
Through your chair, we've not done modelling, but our understanding is, I checked with a number of market-related firms, we understand that that's around about $4,500 per space in an off-street car space. Right? Now, whether that's packaged up, it could be packaged differently. Were you to roll that into a salary package to go and rent one of these things full-time basis, we think is in the order of $4,500 a year.
Councillor Wong.
Could I just add a thought on it through Chair? Sorry, Councillor Wong. We understand, though, that a one-off purchase or hiring or leasing, long-term lease, the longer the lease, we were advised that clearly the longer it is, the more permanent that arrangement, the cheaper it may get for an arrangement. And that's why we haven't been able to step in and say, here is it. And so the reference in the report has always been to a commercial arrangement with a not intentional, naive approach to sit back and say, we think that a deal could be done with a large operator to take on a consistently high occupancy rate in an off-street car park.
Yes.
Councillor Wong.
Mr. Robinson, just following on from what Councillor Main. Now, the City of Melbourne has provided a certain number of spaces for car share within the City Square car park, which is underground, and that's been in place for several years now.
Yeah.
And I understand from a number of business people and architects in the city that actually uses them, how much are we charging for those?
Chair, I think from you're correct. Those spaces have been in place since the commencement of the trial. A small advertisement for our off-street car parking is that it's the cheapest off-street car park you can get in Melbourne. It's the same as the on-street rate. And as a consequence, the rate per space in the City Square car park was considerably less. From memory, I'm looking at Andrew here or maybe Haig, I think it's in the order of $1,250 to $1,500 per space per year. I'm into the speaker. For the record, I would need to confirm that figure, but I think it is significantly less than elsewhere.
So basically, the off-street model in a public car park works?
It depends, is the answer, again, through your chair, and the reason is because it depends on the occupancy. So some car park, this arrangement works clearly on location. I mean, there are high demand areas. The rate that would be applied is why we differentiated between CBD inside the central city but outside the HODL, CBD outside HODL grid and then outside the CBD area, because clearly the demand profile is much, much higher. You can see that the way we've set up the parking period in the normal way against the parking meters.
Okay, no further questions for Mr. Robinson. We'll continue with, I believe, our final two speakers. We have Justin Passaportis from GoGet. Again, you've got 3 minutes to speak.
Lord Mayor, councillors, on behalf of GoGet, thank you for the opportunity to speak. Melbourne has embarked on an exciting and ambitious plan to be a bold, inspirational, and sustainable global city, and one of the top 10 most livable and sustainable cities in the world. Carshare, as a part of the public transport network, is integral to achieving this vision. Our members represent a wide cross-section of the community, from young to old, individuals to businesses and nonprofits. we welcome Council's independent study into car sharing, which has revealed the powerful benefits of car share for the community. According to the study, car share delivered a net economic benefit of $9 million in 2014 alone. The study also states, in no uncertain terms, that if the goal of 2,000 car share vehicles is reached in Melbourne by 2021, the city will realise, at its most conservative estimate, $45 million in net annual benefits. However, two elements of the proposed car share review, if implemented, will reverse car share benefits, making it impossible to achieve for the city to achieve this. Firstly, according to the study, if any additional charges are levied, car share membership will go backwards. Indeed, fees will reverse car share growth, making the goal of 2,000 vehicles and 30% of residents entirely impossible. So, if council wants to attain this goal, option one of no fees is the only choice. The economic and social benefits for the community far outweigh the loss in parking revenue. Any fees would need to be passed on. Why should local residents who choose to give up their cars and share instead be penalised by additional charges effectively imposed by their own council? Simply put, any fees will increase the attractiveness of owning a private car, leading to more congestion and a less livable city. The second important point is the question of off-street versus on-street parking at the ratio of 2-1. This will both make car share less convenient and lead to price increases, which again stifles growth. Councillors, we urge you, adopt option one and review the proposed on-street, off-street provision in active consultation with the community and car share providers. In closing, the decisions made tonight are pivotal to the future of car share in Melbourne. Go one way and the benefits to the community will be great. Go the other way, vote to charge and to force car share off-street, and you will see car share in Melbourne go backwards, not forwards.
Are there any questions? Councillor Wood.
Do you have any sites in the CBD at the moment?
We do.
So in those sites, you currently pay a fee?
We are provided with 7 on-street spaces in the CBD along with the other 2 providers.
And you pay a fee?
That is correct.
So if we adopted Model 1 with no fees, would you reduce your charges to the users, and by how much?
We should bear in mind that we should see the context of these 7 on-street spaces in the broader context of an entire network of vehicles, of which we have close to 500.
My question was, if we remove the fees for the car parks, would you reduce your fees for the users?
This would be a good thing to consider. I believe it's currently not something, but as we've heard from the other providers, in order to be a viable economic model, we need parking spaces to operate.
Are there any other questions? No. Oh, yes, Councillor Main.
So how do you currently accommodate your 500 vehicles? So 7 from us, which you're paying for, and then how many are you not paying for, and then how many are you storing elsewhere?
I think the question here is not about the profitability of the car sharing operators. I think we've missed the point here. If fees are imposed on car share operators, these will be passed to the end users. This will make it more expensive for them, forcing them to consider the alternative, which is car ownership.
Can you answer the question? So you've got 7 that you're paying for, which is $3,000 a pop. So you're paying us $21,000 a year at the moment. And then you've got obviously quite a few allocated from us, which you're not paying for. How many have you got of those?
Excuse me, how many of?
How many car parks provided by the City of Melbourne do you have? On top of the 7 you're paying for, how many do you have provided by us, which you're not paying for?
We have around 50 car parks outside the Hoddle grid.
Right, okay. And then do you have any private parking arrangements as well for your 500 cars?
We do, yes.
How does that work?
Again, well, we pay for those spots consistent with the other operators. And what's your question?
I just want to understand a bit more of the logistics of your business. Also, mm-hmm. the others, who owns GoGet? Is it a family company, small, big?
It's Australian owned and operated.
Right. Privately owned by two individuals.
Right, okay. All right.
Else put up the hand for a question. Are there any other questions? No. Thank you. And we have Tony Penner from the South Bank Residents Group to also speak for 3 minutes. That's it.
No doubt you've seen our new logo on our head of our submission. That's That's
very
the,
exciting.
That's the City of Melbourne.
I was speaking of nothing else in Collins
Street. No, that's the City of Melbourne grant in action. Lord Mayor, councillors, South Bank Residents Group would firstly like to commend the City of Melbourne with their successful car share program to date. This has proven to be a great initiative for the city with massive room for growth if the Sydney model is any indication of what could still be to come. The car share vehicles are visible throughout South Bank and are utilised by a great number of residents frequently. South Bank Residents Group has carefully reviewed the officer's recommendations, and should these recommendations be adopted and costs are increased by the operators, then South Bank Residents Group holds grave concerns for the future success of the program should the operators feel the need to increase costs or remove vehicles. We have heard already that the costs will be passed to the operator, to the users. Personally, I am a user of this service. I don't own a vehicle. I, along with a number of our residents, would either reduce our usage or cease using it altogether. This would be a travesty for the program and subsequently the City of Melbourne with achieving its targets. The review appeared to have been thoroughly researched and considered, of which I, as South Bank's residents group, was a participant in one of the forums. However, I see no mention of or comparison to other users of dedicated parking spaces within the municipality, such as buses, but more relevant, the commercial taxi operation and what charges, if any, those operators are being charged or subsidised, or what agreements may be in place. I trust this council is treating car share fairly and equitably relative to these other users. South Bank residents request council can reconsider any option which will increase the cost to operators that may be passed or subsequently flow through to residents or other users such as businesses. Surely the city can find an alternative way. Not necessarily option one. Maybe we need to defer this and review it and consider again and find some other solution. But at the end of the day, a solution that is not going to increase costs, that in turn will probably flow on to the end users, being the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Penner. Are there any questions, Tony? No, you can sit down.
Cool.
Thank
I'm
you.
I'm going to go. Thank you.
I have no further submitters, so I call a councillor. I call on a councillor to move a motion.
Chair, can I move the motion on the screen with one very minor tweak? At 8.5.1, where it says 2016, can we just say 2015-16? Thank you.
I call a seconder for this motion.
What about a seconder?
Lord Mayor. Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Chair. This has been quite a complicated debate, and the debate hasn't even started yet, so I'm going to try and bring it back to what the key issues here are for us to consider. But as has been mentioned by many today, including especially by the car share companies, The policy basis that we're working in today is the Transport Strategy 2012 that was unanimously endorsed by the previous council and was unanimously re-endorsed, if you like, by this council, because we put in our council plan in the first few weeks of this council that we wanted this transport strategy to be fully implemented. The overarching target in this transport strategy is, by 2030, of trips to the City of Melbourne, 80% are not by car, and of trips within the City of Melbourne, 95% are not by car. Now, there's fantastic data in here which explains the behaviour changes of Melbourne car share members once individual Melburnians join those car share companies, what their behaviour then, how their behaviour then changes, and the number of trips they take by car naturally reduces. So we've got the data, we understand that car share companies help us meet our end goal of reducing the number of car trips overall. The car share individual goal is for 300 on-street car parks for car share by 2016. And as Mr. Robinson has said, currently we have 210, and so we need to really ramp this up if we're going to get there on time. I think we're not quite meeting our goal yet, so we do need to make sure our policy settings are right to get that goal. So this review has been made in that context, but the only reason we're having this review, by the way, is because Councillor Oak put in this year's annual plan to review this car share policy, and this is the end result of that review. Now, the recommendation's been made to us by officers, and it's now up to us to take a whole of council view about what our steps forward should be. I don't think that it's right to say that just because one particular work area has taken the lead over the proposal today, that a whole of organisation approach hasn't been considered. I think that's those assertions were unfair. So I do like to thank Jeff and the entire team for putting all of this work together. It is a complicated piece of work, but I think that there are a lot of different things that need to be balanced quite carefully. The most important component of this review, though, is to support the expansion of car share services in the city. Everything else to that is secondary. We've just got to make sure that we're supporting the expansion of car share services. So the two-for-one mechanism is new. It's not the way many other municipalities do it, and I want to make sure that we do absolutely get it right, and I am a little bit nervous about it because it is something that hasn't been tried. Mr. Robinson said I shouldn't call it an incentive system but an encouragement system, and we haven't yet proved that it is going to work. Based on the data we've got before us, I need to trust that it will work, and if it's not going to work, we can review it in the future. But on balance, I think that the two-for-one mechanism that's inside the policy is something that we should support at this time. The one is very important. On-street parks is what the business model for these car share companies is based on. I'm a member of a car share company. I use car share all the time. And the reason I joined is because I saw that right around the corner from my house was a car on the street that was within a 1 minute walking distance from me. I understand that the business model means that on-street visibility is absolutely central. But on balance, I've got a few amendments here to the recommendation from management, and I'll end there by quickly running through them. Now that I've reiterated council support for the expansion of car share, I think we need to do a lot of work with car share companies and developers to put these put the car share companies and developers together, and that's what 8.5.1 does. It says that one of our developer forums coming up this financial year should have a car share theme, so that we're putting the right people in contact with the right people, so that we can really ramp up the off-street car parking component of this. And we should also be connecting car share companies with apartment block bodies, corporate, wherever we possibly can, so that we're helping the car share companies to meet these targets that we've set. And of course, the fees. I don't want us to be increasing the fees for CBD HODL grid rates that are currently in place. We've got a $3,000 a year rate. I didn't support option three, which on the third year rose to $4,500. I think that we should leave the fees overall where they are. We've been written to by many, 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 many people saying, if you increase the fees, the costs will go on to the end user. Please don't do that. And this amendment responds to that. There are some smaller fees outside the HODL grid, which I think are fair. We've got to get the balance right. We cannot fully subsidise this service and then just raise the rates generally so that all of the non-car share company users just have higher rates and wear it as well. We've got to draw the line somewhere. But the last thing I want to say is that we're not making a decision tonight. We're recommending a series of issues to council. In 3 weeks' time, the council, as the ultimate setter of fees and the budget in multi-year programs, will be making a final decision.
If over the course of the next 3 weeks we think we need to make a few further tweaks, I'm going to regret saying this, but we will definitely consider that. All we're doing today is recommending to council that it do this. There is a last chance here for us to just go away and in the cold light of the morning think about how the debate went tonight and see how we go. So on balance, I think this is probably striking the line just right.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Lord Mayor, a seconder would like to speak.
Thank you. Councillor Leppert has said most of what I wanted to say, so I won't repeat any of what he has said. This is not an argument about whether this is a worthy industry or one that we want to support. We do. It's as clear as that. This is an argument about at what level should we subsidise this industry. That's what the argument is about. You know, should we be subsidising it at about $300,000 a year or at about $5 million a year? You know, where is the appropriate level for us to balance the social good against the cost to taxpayer? And I think that is, to put the whole thing in context, it's not about not supporting car share. It is about saying at what level are we prepared to subsidise it? I hope Councillor Leppert doesn't regret his offer there over the next 3 weeks, but it would be contingent on those companies being transparent with us about their balance sheets. And, OK, that can be kept confidential, but that would be a necessary part of any further conversation, and it would need to be completely transparent and open. Having said that, the two-for-one argument, the go-get presentation reminded us that of, you know, 500 cars, 57 of them are subsidised by the City of Melbourne, and the company buys the others. So the two-for-one model is not one that the companies are not used to. They are used to procuring these spaces to provide for demand, and if they can drive a great bargain in the right places, good on them. This proposal from Councillor Leppert actually says that, and you know, I won't be held to this figure, but it's around $600,000 a year that this council is prepared to subsidise companies large and small, privately owned and publicly held. There are many, many worthy and policy-aligned businesses in our city doing great work that we wish to promote, to which we don't give $600,000 a year of subsidy. This one, we are, because we've been told it's a fledgling industry. But I wonder when fledgling actually starts to leave the nest. We did this some time ago now, when we subsidised it in the first place. We're prepared, I think, on the evidence of tonight, to do it again for a further 3-year period at $600,000 a year, which is not inconsiderable to any business or industry. And that's why I think Councillor Leppert's amendment is a sensible one, although a costly one that we will have to consider at budget time. But it doesn't minimise in any way, and I would reject any suggestion that the work that has been done to bring us to this point has been anything but absolutely exemplary in terms of independence and then attempting to strike a fair balance between the competing priorities we've heard tonight. And that's why I'll support Councillor Leppert's motion.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Are there any other councillors like to speak to the motion? Councillor Wood.
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy to support this motion. I think it strikes the right balance. I heard a number of arguments tonight, well put. A few of them didn't quite hit the mark for me. I mean, taxis pay some pretty hefty licence fees, so I put that one to the side. We're a flexi-car user in our own business. It's been a great service for us. So I echo the Lord Mayor's comments in that we are wholeheartedly behind this as an industry, and it's about what level of subsidy that we reach for it, and I think we're reaching the right sort of balance. At the end of the day, we're giving over public real estate as part of this, and there's a lot of demand for that real estate as well. As you can understand, there are many, many companies who want a piece of public real estate. So I think the push to go towards the private car parks is a good one. I recognise that we need to do some work in supporting you to get there. I think what holds a lot of excitement for me in terms of the future of this industry is really those conversations that happen with developers where they see the business opportunity that this presents to sell and differentiate their towers. So I think the removing that price increase in the licences for year three is a good move, but I see a lot of upside for your industry, and we look forward to supporting you in that.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. Are there any speakers against the motion? Councillor Mayne.
Thanks, Chair. I'm speaking against, I guess, just to illustrate the point that Councillor Leppett made earlier, that this committee is only providing advice to council in 3 weeks' time. So my preference would have been to defer this motion and deal with it at council, but in effect, this committee is not making the decision. We're only making a recommendation to council. And so I think I'll be voting against to demonstrate that I think we're going to need to make some changes, and I'll be arguing internally that I think we need to make some changes. I think the 30 submissions that we've received on email have been very, very persuasive, and the submissions we've heard from the companies tonight, I think, are quite forceful. I mean, people might be irritated by the way that was presented, but, you know, we are moving the goalpost here on a system, and we obviously are very important in terms of the business model and the success of the business model. And I think we need to think about the fact that we're so far behind Sydney. And why is that? And I think that in the context of $107 million a year in parking, when you include everything, QVM and a share of our $7 million a year share of the congestion levy that we get, that, you know, $300,000 or $400,000 a year is not material. It's not material. And then you consider that we've got record residential population growth. Last year, we're the fastest growing population in Australia of any council. There is a massive pipeline of towers going up. And we need to think about that and get ahead of the curve. And I think we need to provide subsidised car share, market much better to the developers, get into the body corporates and the owners' corporations, advertise this publicly and get a massive take-up. And we've said we want a massive take-up, and then we've said we're going to slug, and then we've had all the operators saying this is going to hurt us. Some of them might withdraw from the business, get out entirely. If we're going to have a submissions process and we're going to listen and consult with stakeholders, I've found that the 30 emails I've read have been very powerful. I mean, the best arguments I've ever seen on any issue in terms of well-articulated submissions on sustainability, on affordability. I think car share should be as cheap as possible. I'm Chair of Finance, and I think we should stop being addicted to parking revenue. We make too many decisions in this council where we're driven... not taking out the car parks on Latrobe Street when we put the bike lane in. You know, we're driven by revenue defence too much on parking because it's $107 million a year, because it's, you know, compared to rate revenue of $240 million, it's a very material figure. And we've got huge capacity in car parking. Sydney's got 20 metres building to building. We've got 30 metres building to building. There are so many car parks out there. We moved an amendment on the night with the motorcycle policy where we handed over 120 HODL CBD car parks to motorcyclists for free. We're converting paid car parks for free in the next 12 months. Bang, we wrote off $250,000 a year every year. One night, one amendment. Yeah, 20. But sorry, you're right. It was 20. It was 20. You're right.
Chair of Finance.
It was Chair of Finance. What it delivers.
Glad you're doing the figures
for
us.
What it delivers is 120 motorcycle car parks. Is what the figure I was looking for. So we
you,
said.
Sorry, Councillor Mayne, are you still
I'm
speaking
about
to you.
30 seconds ago. Okay. Yeah. So we're making policy decisions where we're giving up car parking. Go back and look at our decision with the motorcyclists, where we readily surrendered revenue, readily. A couple of hundred, $250,000 a year, stroke of a pen, one paragraph, after persuasive submissions by the motorcycle
like
lobby.
Tonight.
And I think there's been a persuasive case again, and I think we need to take up the operator's offer in showing us their finances. And if we see the finances and we see that it's not a gold mine and because it's been sold, this is somehow a bad thing. If we actually see the finances and it doesn't show, you know, a gold mine, it actually shows a business that's losing money, are we going to take that on board, or are we going to just say, oh, it's been sold, they're making too much money, we're not here to subsidise private businesses? I just think that mentality I find very troubling. We're here to be sustainable, we're here to look after 5,500 members of these schemes, and I think we should have a serious look about it. And we're missing two councillors tonight. We're only nine, we need 11.
I'm confused. Are you moving a deferral or are you
I'm voting
against,
and
it?
I'm saying we need to have a serious internal debate and further engagement with stakeholders and make a different decision in 3 weeks' time.
So,
we need to email everyone else.
Councillor Ong, you're speaking for the motion?
Yes, Chair. I will speak for the motion. I've listened to all the presentations and my fellow councillors' arguments, and a lot of numbers have been thrown around. But I want to start from numbers. The City of Melbourne over the last 4 years built 18,200 apartments. Out of that, less than 20% were car parks included for those apartments. We know that the total number of users of cars have decreased because why? We have such a great public transport system within the city through the tram networks, through the bus networks, through the cycle paths that we've built for a lot of people. Yes, we have a strategy in transport to reduce car use in the city, which is why we put that into the planning scheme a few years ago to purposely achieve that outcome. Because when I look at one comment says, oh, Sydney can do it. Sydney collects $1 billion a year from fees and charges and rates. We've been fighting local state government here to try to increase our take of the fees from developers, and I can't do it because why? The Planning and Environment Act doesn't allow us to do that. So we will keep giving money away before we figure out how to get more money in. So that's one point where I just want to put the facts in place. As I've said before, we're thinking about how we put into the planning scheme that all future developments will have as a mandatory requirement off-street car share spaces. They have to work out how to do it, and electric charging points, because we plan for the future, because that's where we're heading. Now, Councillor would say, you know, they're using, the car share companies are using public space. Yes, public infrastructure created by the City of Melbourne to provide for rotation of car spaces in the city, which helps our businesses, who are our biggest ratepayers. Because why we have time limit, half an hour, 1 hour, 2 hour, is so that people can come, do their business, do their shopping, whatever, move, so other customers can come, rather than people take a spot permanently. So I then look at the argument from the car companies. We currently charge them, the last 3 years, there are 21 spaces shared between three companies at $3,000 a year. It's very difficult business. We give them free places, and they are companies that own hundreds of cars. Somewhere in there, you either make money or you're already bankrupt. But if you've got hundreds of cars, I'm in business, and I own multiple businesses. I can tell you, if it's losing money for 3 years, I'm looking for a way to get out, not to continue to expand it. Okay? And lastly, if we want to go down the path of option one and give it all free, well, if I want to go free, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll reserve 70% for new operators to come in so it provides a competitive environment for the benefit of all the car share members. Because why? To me, it is a three-way monopoly at the moment. So I look at it, well, if we're going to provide free, if we're going to subsidize the industry, let's bring some new players in, let's bring some players with less overheads and less costs, and give a much better outcome for all the users. Because right now, all I'm hearing is, we're dying, we just want it free. And if you continue with the fees, we'll slug everyone more. Just don't get it. I just don't get that.
Thank you, Councillor Ong. Councillor Foster, you're speaking to the motion?
That's right. Thank you, Chair. Look, we've spent a lot of time on this. I'm not going to spend too much longer on it, but it's worth raising just a couple of points. The first is that there were actually three options before us tonight, and one of those options was a full cost recovery option. No one here is suggesting that that is the option that would be taken up. So it's to the operators, it's worth remembering that this situation could have been a whole lot worse. Secondly, I've taken on board everything that's been said by the car share operators, and one thing that stood out to me was one in particular arguing that in the event that that this option proceeds tonight, that this recommendation proceeds tonight, costs would then have to be flowed on to the users of the scheme. That would discourage the users of the scheme and people would start buying their own cars again. This is starting to sound like a model of volatility of the business that would effectively force them out of the trade. Yet they're saying that they'll operate anyway. So one operator said that they would probably pull out. One operator said that they would persist. Another one, not too sure where they sat. I just think that really in the end, we're talking about a model that is, I take on board the points of other councillors tonight, we're talking about a model that is likely to work if it's given a shot, but it can't work if we're going to have this constant negativity surrounding the model that we're going to support tonight. I think car share operators will work in a way that is going to support their own businesses. I don't think anybody wants to go out of business. If that means that there is a small cost that flows on to some to users of the schemes, I think that a small cost is something that people will wear. And I think in the end, local government doesn't subsidise for-profit commercial enterprises. It just, as a principle, it doesn't. I don't know why we would go out of our way to cut our own bottom line so much as to support a profit-making commercial enterprise to the extent that's being suggested as anything other than this option that's before us tonight.
Are there any other councillors like to speak for the motion? Anyone like to speak against the motion? It's my turn to speak then. Oh, goodness. I've been practising mindfulness meditation and I wish it was working for me right now and bringing down my anxiety levels. I have to say that I was quite stressed in coming into tonight's debate, given it is a very complex report in front of us around the different models, the report was quite large. It talked a lot about different mechanisms to support car share, and I guess in my mind, we do want to support car share. It's not a business decision in my mind. And I must admit that I would have considered a deferral because I'm not yet comfortable about making a decision. But I'm convinced by my colleagues, Councillor Leppard and the Lord Mayor, that this is a recommendation that's going to Council. I believe I have 2 weeks, not 3 weeks, to consider further everything that has been brought for us tonight, as well as all of the discussion that my colleagues have brought forward. And I know that Councillor Main and I have a parking meeting next Wednesday, I believe, where we are discussing, it's not just about car parking, it is also about how do we allocate spaces on our streets for bike corrals, for the motorcyclists, for expansion of the footpaths so that we can encourage greater walking in our city, which is what the city is doing. And I know that there's been a lot of discussion about what the city is doing already for other modes of transport, and we do provide spaces for bikes. We do remove car spaces for bike lanes. We do also support other sustainability measures within the city, not even related to transport, whether it's about waste management or solar or water or green open space. I think that saying that we don't support that we shouldn't support car share is ridiculous. but how we reach a model that works for our bottom line, if that is one measure that we're considering tonight, but how we come to a decision about the 2-for-1. I'm not yet convinced how the 2-for-1 will work, and I need to get a bit more understanding about that before the council meeting and whether that is a barrier. I would hate that to be a barrier to expanding car share in our city. We need car share in our city. We need to reduce the cars in our street, and we've seen that it has worked. We need to ensure that the policy that we adopt, the model that we adopt, is enabling and not disabling. I'm very concerned, based on the conversation and the submissions we've heard tonight, that we could be creating barriers, and so I would hate for that to occur, and that would be part of my consideration for the council meeting. And though the recommendation or the motion that Councillor Leppard has put forward does help address that with the developer forums and connecting the car share companies with the body corporate, but understanding the difference between getting developers to provide membership or developers or body corporates to provide membership to residents versus actually space within their building, and also the provision in off-street car park it makes it very complex and very difficult to arrive at a decision. And so I have to say that whilst there are two ways we could go. We could defer it and come up with a new recommendation at council, or we take this on board as a recommendation to council and then we can obviously revise this at the council meeting. So it's a bit both ways, I'm sorry, and I'm trying to explain that I am supporting the recommendation in front of us, but I have a lot to think about in the next 2 weeks, and we have, as I said already, a meeting planned with Councillor Main next week. Where hopefully, in his deferral and his consideration, he's come up with some further recommendations on how we can amend the model, because the last thing we wanted, you'd want to do in voting against the recommendation in front of us is to vote against supporting car share, because we have to. I want us to have a positive result at the council meeting where we're actually supporting the continuation of car share. I would hate to see a vote against such a report, and so. Voting against this one, I believe, sends that message as well. So, with a lot of anxiety, I'll go home and try and practice that meditation. But I support this recommendation, and I look forward to look forward to some alternatives towards the council meeting. The mover like to close debate, Councillor Lefford.
Let me just close debate by saying that the debate isn't over, as has been identified. There's 2 weeks now, and I said three, I apologise. Council will consider this matter again. Thank you, everyone who's made contributions to the debate. There are nine councillors here with disparate views. I want a result, though. I took what the recommendation from management was, and I've shaved out, I think, $200,000 to $300,000 worth of city funds towards the benefit of both the car share companies and therefore the car share end users. I think that's as far as I can go in order to still maintain a majority, and so that was my goal. I want to get a result that was based entirely on the sheer amount of submissions that have been made to us, and so I want to thank all of you for putting in a submission. We do have the debate then again in 2 weeks' time, and we'll see where it lands, but I commend the motion.
Therefore, I put the motion on the screen to the vote. All those in favour, raise their hands. Councillor Wood, Councillor Louie, Councillor Foster, Councillor Ong, Councillor Lefford, Councillor Oak, Deputy Lord Mayor and Lord Mayor. All those against, Councillor Main. I declare that carried.
Me.
Lord Mayor.
Thank you. This concludes the reports from management to be considered. There is one item of general business to be considered, and that is the notice of motion standing in Councillor Main's name. You might care to pause for a moment, Councillor, while our guests leave, and then move the motion. No.
Don't delete that title.
It's a very strange one. The motion's right, it's just the title's wrong. Okay. Would Councillor Main like to move the motion standing in Councillor Foster's name?
So moved.
Is there a seconder for that motion? Councillor Wood. Councillor Main.
Well, if they're not talking about the South Bank Residents Association logo in Collins Street, they're definitely talking about this one. Council submissions are not centrally collated on our website. Quite a few government agencies or peak bodies will have a button on their website that says submissions, and every last submission that they've done. So I remember reading the Royal Commission into Family Violence submission and thinking this was a very well-argued submission. It's a shame it's not public or on our website in some form. And then obviously we had a Better Apartments submission, which was approved by this committee. It just got me thinking that if we strive to be one of Australia's most open and transparent councils, we should have a submissions page. And so this will take it back with the Lord Mayor's private permission. Said he's happy to take it back to when he became Lord Mayor. So the start date is late 2008. We've given the management a challenge of coming up with 10 interesting ones, including the two I mentioned, and I look forward to reading some other interesting submissions on policy matters that we've made to external bodies that some of us won't be aware of, and certainly the community might not be aware of either. There is another gap, potentially, which is speeches, but that's a whole other debate for another time. So we'll get to that one on another time. and see if we can get up this highly controversial submissions disclosure motion this evening.
Councillor Wood.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'm unsure how the votes will fall tonight, Councillor Mayne, on this very important motion before us. But I, on a serious note, I think that the work that's put into the submissions is worthy of going up on the website. I agree with you that a lot of work is put into the submissions, and it'll be there freely available for ratepayers, businesses to see the sort of work that the city puts into those submissions. Submissions, some of them up to 450 pages long, so I think we may need to be a little bit discerning about some of the bigger ones that go up there, but I look forward to seeing what submissions reach the top 10 and who judges the top 10 of those submissions. Happy to support.
Thank you. Is there a further contribution? Councillor Roll.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There's no such thing as top 10. My view is every important policy submission papers from council to any level of other governments and external bodies should be on the record. Yeah, yes. But what I'm saying is that, yes, so there's at least, and I think that's important, is that it's actually not just show what council's been doing, but it's actually also reflective of the professionalism and the skill and the knowledge level that this council and its officers have. Because many of the submissions that I've read to federal government and to state governments have significant technical input that I would say that not many other local government or other agencies have that capability. So I think it's a very good thing to put this on, and I totally support it.
Can I just add a brief word to it? My understanding is that this is, I mean, there are some that we could call submissions by council because they come before council, we ratify them, endorse them, and they belong to council. There are others which are prepared by the corporation, and they also, I think, are meant to be captured by this. They don't necessarily come to us. They are the independent advice of our officers. And I'm taking that to be included in the submissions. And I think that is terrific because, in fact, in both cases, this will showcase the quality of work that is done by our officers in providing advice to us. And therefore, I think it's a great idea. Councillor Leppett.
Sorry, I had read this as being submissions from council, not submissions from the City of Melbourne. And so can I ask, without, I don't want to move an amendment or anything, because as Councillor Mann identified, this is not the largest item we've considered this year. Can I ask that if this is to be implemented, I'm not sure I'm asking, I'll maybe ask Mr. Williamson, if this is to be implemented, can the website please distinguish between submissions that are made by council and submissions that are made by the administration? Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any further submission contributions? Mover wish to conclude?
Just to clarify that the two examples given were deliberately one of each category.
Yep.
Domestic violence did not come to council or committee, but it was council's submission because it was the officers acting under delegation, which is designed to capture, and the other one did come to a vote. So example from both sides. In other words, officers, we want examples from both sides.
Thank you. In that case, I'll put the motion of those in favour. That is unanimous. Thank you. This concludes the items of general business. Are there any items of proposed urgent business? In that case, we provide a 15-minute period for people to ask questions. Would anyone like to ask us a question? Yeah, sorry, Shane.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Councillors, if I may take you back to the Queen Victoria Market debate. I know that the Council is very proud of its consultation record, and yet we have submitters coming forward saying that they don't believe they're being heard. I wonder whether Council has a view on why that's the case.
I must say, Shane, I mean, there is sometimes a difference between people being heard and the conclusions that are reached being different from their views. But I think, you know, I don't think I have seen a more comprehensive consultation over 3 years where people have had the chance to give input. And then if the conclusion does not agree with what they have said, we say why. And we've done so at three stages along the way. So I must say, I'm a little baffled by that. I think sometimes, not to be unkind, you know, you can go on talking forever and ever. And the other thing I would note is you were here tonight and heard, on the one hand, a series of arguments saying, hey, slow down, we haven't been heard, please talk to us more. And then from another group of traders, people saying, hey, speed up, go faster, we need you to get on with this. So at some point you have to make a call and say, this is what we have proposed, this is what we are going to do. and that is the master plan. A number of those questions asked were about implementation, which you can't do until you have got the master plan actually approved. You know, we can't tell them about transition or what might be happening during process because we haven't considered that yet. But that is also a part of what we're going to have to do. So in terms of the master plan and the argument about is this about the way the market should look, we have not had strongly contrary views to that. And those raised tonight were to a large view, in my view, outside the ambit of the master plan. They might be proper concerns, but they're not part of the master plan. You know, a business as usual or a business continuity case has nothing to do with the master plan for the market itself, for instance. And in the case of the solicitors who put an argument, that was the majority of what they argued to us in that submission. So that would be my answer to it.
Thank you.
Sorry, Angela. Yes.
Thank you. My question is for the Chair of the Planning Committee, Councillor Ong. I had intended to bring some images to support the question I wanted to ask. Would it be possible for Council to consider and make some sort of commentary on what I see as the proliferation of the use of black in our buildings, particularly in heritage areas? However, I've noticed that the upper levels of even setbacks in heritage areas are increasingly being built in black. A lot of the tall towers are being built in black, and in Melbourne, which has got a lot of grey skies, it just adds to the prominence of higher elements in buildings. And in particular, I'd like to refer you to a building in Leveson Street, which faces due west, which is about four stories high on Leveson Street, completely black, has black soffits, black glass, black everything. Black isn't a heritage colour, but it's also, I would imagine, going to cause enormous concern for the people living there. They're going to have poorer light and greater heat absorption. So would it be possible for the planners to consider the implications of using black, so I guess Melbourne black, in their buildings? And you know, if it's one small thing we
can
do.
Can I suggest we take that question on board?
Take that on board.
And have a look at what we might provide for you. Please don't tell me black is not a heritage colour. I've just been told I have to paint my fence black on my house because it's a heritage colour.
Well, in North Melbourne.
That's the city of Port Phillip, though.
The buildings, if there are very few bluestone buildings and they're not black.
No, I agree. Thank you. A question, yeah. Please do.
Thank you, Councillors, Lord Mayor. My name is Peter David. I'm a co-founder of a software house that specialises in vehicle access systems. And we've just spent the day in Adelaide speaking with the council there. I have two questions. One, I value your comments about your concern for car sharing. I think it is the way of the future. There's challenges in the business models. It's kind of sad the guys aren't here. I would like to ask the question of Councillor Oak, I guess, because you're running it. Have you actually gone to Europe to speak to any of the cities in Europe as far as why they're successful? I think it would be valuable. And the other one is, I guess I'd like to ask the council to consider there are more than one business models for parking. So currently here in Melbourne is pod-based parking, but there are many other systems around, like free-floating vehicle and parking, that kind of thing. So I'll keep
it
short.
Do you want to start the first
one, Kathy? Not to prolong the car share discussion any longer, but I am very well aware of other car share schemes around the world, and but it is difficult to compare apples and oranges in terms of the way that our city operates and the levers that we have. A lot of European cities and US cities have a lot greater responsibility, especially around transport and public transport. They run their metro systems. It's a different system than what we're operating in. But in terms of, and I am taking into consideration the success of car share in many cities, and one of the reports we had tonight about Milan, you know, talks about the success, the great success of car share there. So of course we're taking that into consideration, and I think it's not just for me to know that, but for others. But in terms of the parking options, that's exactly what this, our new parking committee that Councillor Main is chairing actually, is to look at how we address and think about parking in the city. And then as Councillor Main is, I think, made clear tonight, we shouldn't be focusing on it in the way that we have done in the past, and we should consider other options potentially.
And in fact, for Queen Victoria Market, if I could add to that, one of the things under consideration is we've given a commitment to 720 car spaces, but as you've alluded to, there are many different methodologies for providing car rather than just pod parking, and we'll certainly be considering those in one of our own projects as a demonstration.
Great. Thank you.
Welcome. Yes.
Hello, my name's Kerry Butcher. I'm a resident of City of Melbourne. I live in Flinders Lane. So I understand that one of the benefits of being a resident of the City of Melbourne is availability of on-street parking permits for residents in a lot of the areas of the City of Melbourne. Because I live in the Hoddle Grid, that's not a benefit that I am able to accept or is ever offered to me. So I guess, more, I don't know if it's a comment or a question, but would maybe the parking committee be able to consider the opportunity of me contributing that benefit that I don't get from the council towards a car share spot? So you don't charge for parking permits anywhere near the regular rate for car parking spots. So that's a benefit that I don't get as a resident. So I wonder if you would consider passing that benefit on to my car, which is my go-get car membership spot. I guess, I don't know if it's more of a comment or a question.
That is part of it. It's why, although the Hoddle Grid is under such demand, mm-hmm. we were determined to find those spots, and Jeff Robinson and his team have been, I think, very mm-hmm. creative in finding those spots in the Hoddle Grid. So we do see it as part of that.
Yeah.
I would caution, though, and it was a point made, I think, by Councillor Foster before, that there is a difference to a benefit accruing to a resident because they are a ratepayer, and a difference to a privately owned company run for profit. I know you may benefit from that company, and that's the point you are making, but yep. the nexus that you make and the analogy you make is not quite a template. Nevertheless,
no, but I think it's well worth considering.
Sorry, this is not a conversation.
Yeah.
One of the reasons we would look to provide those car parks in the Hoddle Grid is exactly why you said. Exactly why.
Yeah. One point in there is that, I mean, residential parking permits is an interesting issue. We have had a system which has preferred historical arrangements, if you like. So in the non-CBD areas, you know, the freestanding mm-hmm. houses, if they've already had permits in the past, you know, there's no attempt to take them away. And we've banned mm-hmm. Residential permits largely for new high-rise. So there's an old class got the permits mm-hmm. and there's a new class who don't. And mm-hmm. car share is one way of mitigating that policy inconsistency. And we're also a little inconsistent with geographically, where residents in East Melbourne and South Yarra have a better system than those in Kensington and other part North Melbourne. And maybe we need to move on that disparity as well as we look at all these levers in the very complex car parking policy setting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
In that case, could I thank members of the public, management and staff for their interest and long-suffering attendance, and declare the meeting closed at 8:37 p.m.